us. But memory's not really up to the job of being able to make sweeping comments about things that we might or might not have done in the past. But I don't think today that I am minded to cross live to Manchester when the leader of the Conservative Party, His Majesty's official opposition, takes to her feet to deliver a speech. I'm open to persuasion. I may well change my mind. But I think my reluctance speaks about the broader demise of the entire Conservative Party. And I say that with no sense of celebration. Not least because it runs a very real risk of being replaced by something obviously and politically hideous. But why is that party in such dire straits?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, Hamas says it has exchanged with Israel a list of prisoners and hostages proposed for release under a Gaza peace deal. Donald Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, and special envoy Steve Witkoff are set to join negotiations taking place in Egypt. Israel hasn't commented, but Hamas says there is a spirit of optimism in Sharm el-Sheikh. Mr. Trump told reporters yesterday that a deal is very close.
We're in very serious negotiations to, I guess you could say, depending on the way you count, 3,000 years, you could say 500 years, you could say, but that it's been raging for a long time. And I think there's a possibility that we could have peace in the Middle East. It's something even beyond the Gaza situation.
Israel's military says it's intercepted another nine aid boats bound for Gaza. Authorities say 145 activists are being brought to shore in Israel for processing and will be deported soon. The government has rejected claims it was responsible for the collapse of a high-profile Chinese spying trial. Critics say ministers are reluctant to designate China a national security threat because they are trying to build relations with Beijing. The case against two men, including a former parliamentary researcher, was dropped last month. LBC's political correspondent is Aggie Chambray.
This is an extraordinary intervention from the Director of Public Prosecution, Stephen Parkinson. And he has said the case collapsed because evidence could not be obtained from the government referring to China as a national security threat. And the argument that Keir Starmer is making is China would have had to be referred to as a national security threat when the charges were actually brought, which was, of course, during the Conservative government.
The Tory leader, Kemi Badenoch, is due to deliver her closing speech to the Conservative Party conference in Manchester. Her address is expected to focus on the economy. She will set out a golden rule that half of money saved from cuts must go towards reducing the deficit. Two teenagers are being questioned after a cyber attack at a London-based nursery chain. The suspects, both 17-year-old boys, were detained in Bishop Stortford on suspicion of computer misuse and blackmail. Kiddo's data, about 8,000 children, was reportedly held to ransom. Dozens of museums in England are to receive a share of £20 million to help them stay open. The government says its Museum Renewal Fund will ensure communities have access to culture for generations to come. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was at 95.14. That's up 30. The pound buys $1.33 and the euro 15. LBC weather dry with sunny spells for many places. A few light showers in the northwest. A high of 18 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Fraud can happen faster than you think. But at Barclays, we use innovative technology that spots fraud in under a second. And our dedicated team of experts work 24/7. So you can go about your day knowing we never stop working to keep you and your money safe. Search Barclays Fraud Protection to see how you can stay one step ahead. Barclays. Make money work for you.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Three minutes after 10, you're listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where, I mean, look, we've done variations on this in the past. Listen, if you want to get in early, then you know the number, 03456060973. The question at the moment that I get to asking you in about 10 minutes' time, or shortly after that, will be a variation on the theme of whether or not the Conservative Party, as we have known it for all of our lives, is to all intents and purposes finished. That will be the question. It's not. I'm not going to do the show based on the presumption that it is, which we may have done in the past. I don't know that we have, but it is. I think it closes down some interesting lines of inquiry, not least what a resurrection would look like, or what a revivification. That's one of my favourite words. You may have noticed. Would look like. But that's where we will be at the end of this monologue. So you don't necessarily need to listen to it in order to have a valid contribution to make, which is not always the case. Of course, I reserve the right to change the question in the course of my own pontifications and ponderings. But as things stand at the moment, I'll be asking you whether or not it is your party, if it is your party, or the one of only two major parties that you have known for most of your life, unless, of course, you're in Scotland, Wales or Northern Ireland. But even then, it's called the Conservative and Unionist Party for reasons. Is it actually over? And if so, why? All right? Possibly even who? If we were going to pin it on one person, who would that person be? Because it wouldn't be Kemi Badenoch, I don't think, would it? And that will be the second part, I think, of your contributions today. I don't want you to ring me in exclusively addressing the question of whether or not we should take the speech live shortly after 11:15 today, but I'm going to add that to the mix because the confusion that I feel is absolutely real. And listen, I may get a bit personal and mischievous and cheeky in the course of this morning, but right now I'm just speaking to you completely authentically. I don't know. I don't know whether there is an objective case for crossing live to Manchester to listen to the death throes, certainly, of a political leadership as opposed to a political party. I don't know. I find, as you know, much of what she does truly ridiculous, but much of what she represents feels to me politically and historically, even perhaps democratically important. Okay? So, I say Conservative leader, who's the first person you think of? It's going to depend partly on your age. Who is the first person that you think of? The first Conservative leader that you think of? You're going to go for Margaret Thatcher. You're going to go for David Cameron, possibly. If you are a lifelong Labour supporter, you might go for Liz Truss. That's the way you go. I've got a 25-year-old colleague who's gone immediately for David Cameron. I think I would probably go for Margaret Thatcher, so it's going to be pretty boring, this experiment, if it depends entirely on your age. Another 25-year-old colleague said immediately Theresa May. It's just a little thought experiment. All of these people popping into your head were leaders of the Conservative Party. And then how about a leader of the Conservative Party who didn't end up Prime Minister? Who are you going to think of then? Pretty tricky, actually. In recent years, they've all had a go. But I mean, if you're a political anorak, if you possibly did a degree or an A level in it, you probably go for William Hague. Do you know? I nearly said Alec Douglas Hume then, but he was Prime Minister. He used to be the byword for leadership failure in the Conservative Party because he inherited the mantle of both leader and Prime Minister, and then lost the subsequent election. William Hague is the leader that most people think of now, as opposed to perhaps Michael Howard. I'm just pointing out that these are not political jokes. Ian Duncan Smith, tricky. And that actually might be part of the problem, part of the question that we're asking, because Ian Duncan Smith was objectively disastrous as leader of the Conservative Party, but because of Brexit, which is no doubt going to feature in our conversation this morning, he was able to reinvent himself as some sort of statesman, despite being a byword for incompetence, idiocy and fantasy CVs. That's part of the problem, perhaps. I don't know, because it's a ruthless machine. They got rid of him when it became clear that he was not going to get close to winning a general election. He didn't even get the chance to fight one. Michael Howard was a good leader, not least because he accepted his fate and put so much effort as leader into preparing the party for the election after the one he knew he was going to lose. He might not want to thank him for it, but he's the guy that put David Cameron, George Osborne and the rest of them in place, in pole position for the inheritance that would follow. Haven't mentioned Boris Johnson yet, and it's nearly 10:10. Boris Johnson, if we were to confine our conversation to the who's of it rather than the whys, would no doubt be writ large. And yet it's 2025. It is only 6 years since he was carried into Parliament on the shoulders of a grateful nation. Kind of. Again, the curse of Cassandra, being a political Cassandra, just sitting there going, this is going to end in tears. It's not a question of if, it's a question of when. You put this guy in charge and you're going to rue the day. Not just the country, but his actual colleagues are going to rue the day. The people currently cheering him to the rafters will be the ones that lose the most from promoting such an obviously inadequate and unsuitable character. And we, as a country, have learnt nothing from it, because the man currently leading the opinion polls in this country is, yeah, I'm going to say it, an even more inadequate and unsuitable character for Prime Minister. And we will sit here again saying that you're going to rue the day, you're going to regret this, like we did with Liz Truss's budget. Oh, there's another one, Liz Truss. Who thought of Liz Truss? I mentioned her, didn't I, in the context of Labour supporters. Sat here saying you're going to rue the day, you can't put her in, you can't let the Tufton Street stink tanks rewrite our economic rules, because the whole thing will blow up. They are nowhere near as clever as they think they are. In fact, they're very, very stupid. They just have the trappings of the British class system, convincing them that their sense of entitlement is actually a qualification. So who'd go for Truss? I don't know. What about other names? Are there any other names? Ted Heath, if you're of a certain age, perhaps. Ted Heath, an impressive politician. Never more so, of course, than when he stamped on the rhetorical windpipe of his cabinet colleague Enoch Powell, despite the fact that at the time, and Satnam Sangira makes a superb case in the Times today, as he writes about his former school mate, and I mean by that simply someone that went to school with Robert Jenrick. I have no idea whether they were mates, and it would be close to libel to suggest that somebody who wasn't was. But they went to the same school in Wolverhampton, so their lessons in race relations and integration would have been very similar, and yet Satnam has ended up one of the best writers in Britain, and Robert Jenrick has ended up one of the worst ventriloquists in history. I don't know if you saw his routine with the wig yesterday at Conservative Party conference, but I say what you like about it, you could see his lips moving. Of that, there is no doubt. So, John Major, again, Ted Heath, I should have finished that sentence, did fly in the face of public opinion when he cut Enoch Powell off at the knees. You know, as we are discovering in recent days, weeks, months, years, racism is a very intoxicating drug. It's a very tempting offer for an awful lot of people who don't like thinking, or indeed taking responsibility for their own actions or political decisions. A very, very, very intoxicating drug indeed. Ted Heath had the courage to stamp on that current breed of Conservative leadership, despite being much more ethnically diverse than any cabinet Ted Heath ever sat in, are stoking up the racism, ramping up the rhetoric. John Major. Interesting character. Decent man, clearly. One of those politicians who seems to grow in stature the further away from power he gets. For some people, Gordon Brown fits into that category, but that means you weren't paying attention at the time, because he was a superb politician, just not a very good television performer. And that's pretty much it. Unless, of course, you are older than me, in which case you'd be reaching for Harold Macmillan. And, of course, everybody would reach for Winston Churchill, although it's a historical fact that he flipped parties quite a lot, but I don't know how many people who rightly revere Winston Churchill as our wartime leader think of him immediately as a Conservative Party politician or as a Conservative leader. He also lost spectacularly shortly immediately after the Second World War. So, I mean, it's all there, isn't it? 30 minutes after 10 is the time. And then we turn to today, and we turn to I don't know, maybe I should feel a little bit more schadenfreude about it, or a little bit more happiness, given that one of the main reasons why the Conservative Party is in such dire straits is because they were in denial about all of the things we've been talking about ad infinitum on this programme, all the things that Conservative supporters, particularly in my profession, but they've of course gone a little bit silent, or they insist that you go silent about all the things that they encouraged you to vote for, like Boris Johnson and Brexit. We should feel a little bit of schadenfreude. But the problem of being genuinely patriotic is that you worry about the state of the country, not just the bits of it that you support or most enjoy. And the demise of the Conservative Party as we know it is very, very bad for politics. But it's all their fault. It's certainly not your fault, and it's certainly not my fault. It's all their fault. Where do those faults lie? And I missed out Rishi Sunak, not deliberately, but just, I think, because historically he will be seen very much as a holding pattern or a postponement of where we are now. 0345 6060973 is the number that you need to tell me whether, and not why in the first instance, I think that would be inappropriate, whether you think, and of course, as always with these phone-ins, your opinion is more interesting if you are or were a conservative. And actually, that's not true today, is it? No, your opinion is more interesting. The more attention you've been paying, the more interesting your opinion usually is. But on occasions like this, especially if you're describing yourself, if you're saying to me, I can't never vote for the Tories again because of dot, 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 Partygate, for example, that's actually really interesting. And you might not even be able to name two members of the current cabinet, but that is the position that you... So whatever has flipped you is interesting to me. So what is your answer to the question of whether or not the Conservative Party, as we have known it for all of our lives, is over? Is it all over, bar the shouting? 0345 6060 973. And if so, why? Why is it? What has gone so wrong? And who do you hold most responsible? We also need to decide whether or not to take Cammie Badenoch's speech at 11:15 today. And you're not even going to believe me when I tell you. I haven't got a clue. I just want someone to make the decision for me. Someone just tell us what to do. Please. I don't know. I took Keir Starmer's, but he's the Prime Minister. Did I take Keir Starmer's when he was Leader of the Opposition? Can anyone even remember? Does anyone ever listen to this nonsense? Do we have any people taking notes? Do we keep records of whatever bilge comes out of my gob at 10 o'clock every morning? I mean, I have no idea. But in some ways, if it's the last ever speech by the leader of the Conservative Party in the role of... Well, it won't be the last ever, will it? Because we're not having a general election anytime soon. Could be her last ever. So, what's going on? And... should we take that speech, for good or for ill? The time now is 10:16. If you hit the numbers now, 0345 6060 973, you will, as the man says, get through.
LBC.
Your daily life often goes like this. With Air France, choose instead.
Wow.
Until the 21st of October, put your daily life on hold. Take advantage of Air France moments and book your flight to Beijing from £499, flying from London Heathrow via Paris. Return including tax. Elegance is a journey. Air France. To book and for terms and conditions, visit airfrance.co.uk.
Play Set for Life from the National Lottery. Winners get 10K every month for 30 years. You could win on repeat. Set for Life. Play now on the National Lottery app. Terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
I'm telling you, raise taxes, that's how.
Cut spending, less waste, more sense.
Move north, get more for your money.
Until winter hits your heating bill.
Fair.
Up to 9.13% annual return. We all agree that's strong.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's hard to ignore.
Cufflink. Auto-invest property-backed from £500. Visit cufflink.com. That's K-U-F-L-I-N-K. Register your interest today. Your capital is at risk. Tax rules apply to IF ISAs and may be subject to change. Cufflink is authorised and regulated by the FCA.
Our pet's in a pickle. We're here when it matters most. For fuss-free pet insurance policies as unique as they are. Visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
And do you know what? I'm in one of those moods. You can have a crack at everything I've said today, should you so desire, because maybe I'm wrong to be sad. Maybe I'm wrong to think that it would be a shame to see the Conservative Party shuffle off this political coil. You can tell me why. I mean, I have the history. Labour came closest to obliteration before the Second World War. But the Liberals, I used to be a bigger force. So it happens. Political parties rise and political parties fall. We just never sort of think it's going to happen here. Are we watching it happen in real time today? Neil's in Alton in Staffordshire. Neil, what do you reckon?
Hello, James. Hello. How are you doing?
Very well, mate. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I think they are in the death throes. I think they are finished. My recollection of the
They, not we. I noticed.
Okay,
carry on.
I have to confess, full disclosure, I'm a Labour Party voter, not a member. But yeah, I go back to Ted Heath and Harold Wilson, and that's my first recollection of politics. My dad was always a Labour voter. But I think it squarely actually rests with Boris Johnson. I think I would nail it on him. David Cameron before that, and I think there's always been that European division in the Conservative Party. Cameron pandered to the right of the party by tabling the referendum in the first place.
Yes.
That backfired, blew up in his face. And then Boris Johnson kicked out all the sensible people in 2019, got rid of them all, had that massive call, and was just left with the what there is now.
Yeah, the problem with this analysis, which I obviously share up to a point, and we may need someone saying we, not they, to take us further on this journey,
yeah,
is that Boris Johnson and Dominic Cummings did get rid of everybody publicly honest. There were some people privately honest who stayed, but anyone who felt it was important to be publicly honest about Brexit got slung out of the party. But even under those circumstances, what they were left, the flotsam and jetsam that was left, make the people around Nigel Farage look like the Brains Trust. So the migration towards reform is not explained by what you've just described, or is it? Is it like the person who's already sold their house to send it to a fraudster in the Far East, and they've just come back and said, "Oh, sell your car, and we'll finally get the money again"? I don't know, but it doesn't quite work as a comprehensive analysis, because the things that failed, whether it's Boris Johnson, who Nigel Farage thought was brilliant, whether it's Liz Truss, who Nigel Farage thought was brilliant, whether it's Brexit, who Nigel Farage thought was brilliant, doesn't really explain. Unless we're crediting these people with a little bit too much thoughtfulness and intelligence, it doesn't explain why you would migrate to the bloke who's been wrong about everything.
I think there's a couple of things going on, James. Yeah. I think there's an element of abandoning ship, rats jumping off the ship,
yes,
and looking for a new home. And I think there's some of that going on. And I think there's an element of the Tory party been trying to out-reform for a while. And, you know, when they did that call in 2019, they attracted more right-wing people with those kind of views, more aligned with UKIP and Brexit and now reform.
Don't forget the Red Wall. I mean, the Red Wall doesn't necessarily fall outside of the constituencies that you've described. But, so Johnson just kind of won it on vibes, didn't he, really, rather than on...
He did. On feelings, as you always say. You know, it was all about feelings rather than actual facts. I mean, give me, I know it's the them, not us, but
yeah,
if I had a Michael Heseltine or a Ken Clark to vote for now, yeah, I would absolutely be drawn towards them, because they were sensible, moderate, middle England conservatives, and that's the heart of conservatism, as I remember it, and that's just gone.
Where would that voter go now? They'd probably crossing their fingers and voting for Keir Starmer, wouldn't they?
Yeah, or maybe Lib Dems, maybe, you know, Lib Dems Green, maybe.
I don't think a Ken Clark, Michael Heseltine fan is quite ready to land with the Greens. But no, you know, maybe the Liberal Democrats, they differ on some issues, but they're going to be a huge threat in some constituencies. Final question, thank you for kicking things off with such a quality contribution. But final question, is it a shame? I mean, because this is where the fact that you said they, not we, becomes more interesting. Is it a shame?
I don't celebrate it at all.
No, I don't either.
I think we need a good opposition in politics to keep our, you know, parliamentary system running correctly. We need that balance, and reform aren't going to give us that. You know, there's no one sensible in that party.
Right.
We need a quality opposition. And I do mourn the loss of that sensible Conservative Party, you know, as to give us those checks.
And we're going to put it at 20. We're going to put it at 2019. People are more than welcome to track those roots further back, or to challenge that analysis. But I think that's going to be a very popular position. And so, I mean, how do you process that? Oh, that, of course, you process that by hopping into bed with Nigel Farage, don't you? So I was going to say, how do you process that if you fell for the snake oil of Brexit, the snake oil of Boris Johnson, even the nonsense of Liz Truss's mini-budget? How on earth do you sustain the belief that you deserve a vote? Answer, give it to the sort of biggest charlatan of them all. And just cross your fingers that this time, the money from your internet friend's deceased uncle in a lost Saudi Arabian bank account that runs to about £140 million that we can just get our hands on, if you send me the proceeds of the sale of your house, will actually be released and divvied up by tea time today. There's a name for it, isn't there? It's not double down theory, I don't think. It's a bit more sophisticated than that. But anyway, I want other answers to the question. I also want to hear people say no. the Conservative Party is not finished. Clever people are having a crack at what they need to do to resurrect William Hague. There you go. Yesterday, I think, in the Times, writing persuasively about the need to attract young voters. The likelihood of doing so, I'd say, was pretty slim. But if you don't think it's over, then 0345 6060973 is the number you need to tell me why. Thank you, Neil. Anna is in Oxford. Anna, what would you like to say?
Oh, hi, James.
Hello,
so I'm not coming from a perspective of having ever voted Tory, but my dad has always voted Tory his entire life, since his 70s. And he would always describe himself as a Conservative with a small C.
Yeah.
And he's been pretty horrified by what's been going on in the Tory party since the days of Johnson. But, however, despite having emailed his MP to say that he'd never vote Tory again during Liz Truss, he did vote Tory in the last election. So it's like he's completely, he cannot break up from that. And I think my point that I'd like to make is that I think I'd even go further than your last caller. I'd say this is about Trumpism. So I think around the 2016, when the Brexit vote happened, and obviously that didn't go the way that Cameron thought it would happen, Trump came to power, Trumpism became successful. It became a massive means in America to basically make money out of just spreading lies, hate, et cetera, et cetera. And I think the Tories started to look to that because obviously the small C Conservatives and maybe wasn't attracting the younger population because they weren't really moving with the times and becoming more progressive. So they looked at Trumpism and they thought, let's try that. Let's see if we can get in on a bit of that. And they did. And obviously Boris Johnson was the perfect person to embody that in Britain. So they did, and they became increasingly, in my opinion, corrupt, increasingly incompetent. They lost loads and loads of money. We had all the scandals during COVID, et cetera, et cetera. And the country started to go the way that you'd expect it to go, which is the way that I would have thought that America would go. And so the voters started to see this isn't working. We don't want this. So obviously they lost. However, unfortunately, the voters needed something else. The voters that were never going to go for Labour or whatever, or Green, they needed something. So they're desperate. So they look at reform and they think, this is different, this is new, this is different, this is called reform, even its title. But the irony is, and I've been wanting to make this point for weeks on LBC, I find it so frustrating that a lot of reform members are those very same Tories, the ones that brought the Tory party down with their dishonesty, their populism, their culture wars, etc. They fill up the reform party. We've got Nigel Farage, who was obviously one of the big architects of Brexit, and that's part of the mess that we're in. And yet people are fooled, thinking this is something new. It's exactly the same thing. But the difference is, and why the Tory party, I believe, is in a demise, is because Nigel Farage isn't in power. He can say all those things, and people think, yeah, this is going to happen. This is going to make things work. It's been tried. It failed. We know the Tories failed. So people are
But people are still saying Trump's succeeding. So people are still saying Trump's succeeding.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess if they think, well, you know, immigrants are being taken off the streets by ICE, and that's a good result.
Transgender, I don't know if they're being
all of that. Let's unpick
a bit of that, because some Tories didn't embrace it, but there weren't many left to resist it as a consequence. If I add your call to Neil's, as a consequence of that 2019 cull, when people like Jacob Rees-Mogg started shilling for Donald Trump, and Boris Johnson did as well, very enthusiastically, despite the moral depravity being plain to see. And you know, this is why Trump
has that he criticised him about the wall thing.
Then the idea of anybody being able to steer the Conservative Party back to a world where truth matters was sort of sank below the waterline.
Well, this is the funny thing. This is what I don't understand, and why I think that they've really lost the plot, because they obviously brought in so Robert Jenrick and Kemi Badenoch were the front runners for the leadership, and Kemi got it. But you're looking at James Cleverly, who seems to be a reasonably decent, normal person, and they didn't. And my dad, of course, was horrified, and I don't know what he'd do now, but he certainly doesn't like
those people. That's a fascinating counterfactual, isn't it? And the clever money says that they were too clever by half, and they started taking the victory they started divvying up the votes they thought they were going to get to make sure that they went up against the candidate they wanted to go up against rather than a candidate they didn't want to go with, and it all fell apart.
Yeah.
And you ended up with a choice between Tweedledum and Tweedledummer when Badenoch stood against Jenrick for it.
Two worst candidates.
Yes.
In my opinion.
You've got a lot to get off your chest, haven't you? I'm enjoying this. You fill your boots.
Weeks. But, you know, I really feel like, so basically the small C Conservatives, like my dad, will eventually not be voted anymore for obvious reasons. And I don't think that they're going to appeal to the younger people. And so I don't think that the Tory party will demise this year or next year, but probably in the 5 years, I think there's no one going to be left.
There'll need to be a general election for it to sink conclusively below the waves, because they've still got, you know, a significant number of MPs. But the idea of it being turnaroundable, there's one thing, Anna, that occurs to me, and I say this only because Reform UK Limited is obviously a cult of personality. They don't really have any policies except, oh, I like this guy. He's really, really
hot.
Yeah, he's horrible about foreigners, all the foreigners, except the ones he's married to, but all the foreigners. Yeah. And if Nigel Farage decided that he wanted to spend more time with his money, or his house in Clacton that his girlfriend bought with money that apparently was found down the back of a sofa. Then where would people go? No one's going to vote for a party led by whoever's left in Reform after Farage decides to hang up his headphones.
Do you think it's him? Do you think it's his personality?
Yeah, he's good at it. I've been a student of the guy. I mean, you'll allow me to point out that it's very, very easy to unmask and debag Nigel Farage in public, and I still don't understand why other people don't even try to do so, because the man is obviously made of meringue. But yeah, get rid of him, and you can see it now. Jenrick's trying to eat his lunch, as lots of callers said yesterday, and he ends up soiling himself on the conference stage in Manchester. They all tried to eat his lunch. Everyone on the right, all the Tories, have tried to do what he does. He's just better at it than they are, because he's been doing it all his life.
I mean, you've got Andrew Jenkins and people like that who really
Well, that's my point. So if Farage decided to, Farage kept his word for once and actually left the country because Brexit's failed, then there would be nothing left, and that's the only circumstances in which I can currently see the Tories being returning to a place where they become the respectacle for votes like your father's. Well, I know he'd never vote Reform, but I go back to the Tories now, because we're back to a two-party system. I don't know. I just thinking out loud. It is 10:31. Thank you, Anna. Two absolutely cracking calls. I don't want anybody to feel unwelcome on the programme. If they voted for all the things that we've described, Brexit, Boris Johnson, if, like Nigel Farage, you thought that Liz Truss's mini-budget. I don't know if I'm in the mood to talk to you if, like Nigel Farage, you think Vladimir Putin is a brilliant politician who you really admire and who your close friend and colleague took bribes from a stooge for in return for asking questions while sitting next to him in the European Parliament. I think that's probably a treachery too far. But if all the other treacheries, the lower level treacheries, appealed to you, and you think that you know why the Tory party was finished, or if you look back on supporting all of those aberrations and can't quite believe that you fell for it, your answer to the question of whether or not the Tory party is over, and if so, why, then you know the number. Just to Anna's point about the Trumpification. Jacob Rees-Mogg wrote an article for the Daily Telegraph just before they issued a ban on unhinged headlines, because they were getting so embarrassed about how much fun we were having with them. Just before the Daily Telegraph issued a ban on unhinged headlines, they commissioned Jacob Rees-Mogg to write about why he thinks Donald Trump should be the leader of this country, why we should invoke recondite traditions to make him prime minister. I think it was supposed to be tongue-in-cheek, but you can never tell with Jacob Rees-Mogg, because his cheeks are full of artificial plums. So even if his tongue was in there, you wouldn't be able to notice. But it still speaks to the point that they still, today... Oh, 30p Lee, he could have a go at running the gig, couldn't he? God, I don't see much of him anymore. Another example of Farage being quite an astute officer, quite an astute operator, because if you had 30p Lee on your team, you'd probably be quite keen to pretend that you didn't. 10:33 is the time. Thomas Watts has your headlines.
Hamas says it has exchanged with Israel a list of prisoners and hostages proposed for release under a Gaza peace deal. Israel hasn't commented, but Hamas says there is a spirit of optimism at talks in Egypt. Kemi Badenoch is to announce a new golden rule when she closes the Conservative Party conference this morning. She'll promise to put half of money saved from cuts towards driving down the deficit. The government's rejected claims it was responsible for the collapse of a high-profile Chinese spying trial. Critics say ministers are reluctant to designate China a national security threat because they're trying to build relations with Beijing. LBC weather, dry with sunny spells for many places, some light showers in the northwest, a high of 18 degrees.
LBC.
This is what award-winning customer service sounds like. from Real Octopus Energy calls.
The people are friendly on the telephone. You can always get a problem solved. You stepped up, I think, for an energy company, so well done.
The customer service is really good.
People like yourself and all of your colleagues have done such a wonderful job.
Your customer service was tip-top. You know, I couldn't fault it.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running.
Oh, it's chucking it down out there again.
Want some Mao and Pimples?
Mmm, so zingly. Like a lightning storm in your cheeks.
Tingling like thunderbolts on your tongue.
And a 200% chance
of mouth-watering taste quakes.
Tornado incoming!
With the zingly-tingly taste of Mao and Pimples, it's easy to choose fun, chew Mao and.
Lost World Play Barn, Dragon Castle Children's Farm, Jumping Pillows, Wallabies, Froggy Soft Play. Tommy Tractor Play Barn, Quadrapillar, Rowing Boats, Owl Displays, Meerkats, Honey Pot, Bears. Kids, put on your swimmers for Jungle Splash.
Yeah, let's go, Mum.
Right. Cannon Arena, Lemurs, Jungle Kingdom, Go-Karts, Wave Runner 2, Magical Wood, and Cafe.
Nutcatch Adventure Park. Book now at nutcatch.com.
When you go abroad, everyone knows the best way to make yourself understood is to just say everything in English, but louder.
Four beers, please, garçon!
If only there was a way that could work with your advertising campaign. Well, there is. And you're listening to it. Because when you amplify your advertising with radio, 40 million listeners every week get the message. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
10:36 is the time. 03456060973 is the number you need to tell me whether or not you think the Conservative Party is finished. And if you do or you don't, why you've arrived at that conclusion. And then the final question, which is growing in relevance to me, growing in interest to me, the more we pick over these bones, whether or not that is a bad thing. I'm of the mind very much that it is a bad thing, because as our callers so far have reminded us, an awful lot of the territory they used to inhabit was sane, even if it was something you disagreed with. And they are being replaced on the right of British politics as a political force by people, and I hesitate to use the word policies, that are not sane. They are not rooted in reality. They make Liz Truss's fiscal calculations look like the work of Albert Einstein. But it doesn't matter if you're in the business of populism. And that's why the Tories ceding all that ground feels like a shame, but can you really mourn it when it's so obviously their fault? And they are now dedicated to trying to eat the same lunch. I had two leadership elections actually look really significant now. Nobody outside of A-level students and undergraduates ever dig into this stuff. But when Sunak lost to Truss, despite describing in some detail exactly what her economic policies would do to the country, and then when cleverly lost to Badenoch and, what's his chops, Honest Bob Jenrick, you kind of see there the spiral, the death spiral caused by the membership. So we mustn't let them off the hook. You know, Liz Truss didn't end up leadership of the Conservative Party by accident. She ended up with the leadership of the Conservative Party because the Conservative Party gave it to her. The members, the people who probably had their brains completely boiled by Brexit and Boris Johnson and will now never recover. So if you want to talk about why the Tory party failed, you should probably blame them. The people who allowed their own MPs to be removed. People like Philip Hammond, who went from Chancellor of the Exchequer to being deselected by his own constituency party in the amount of time it takes you to eat a Twix. That the members get away with this. And it is all on them, really, I think. And that's something we often forget. But I also want to know why you're not mourning it, why you don't think it's a shame, despite the fact that the space, if you like, is now going to be inhabited by people who've been proved even more wrong about everything. Sam's in Colchester. Sam, what would you like to say?
Good morning, James. How are you?
Very well, mate. What's on your mind?
So, yeah, just listening to obviously what you're saying this morning, and I was a Tory party member. I'm not anymore.
Okay.
I voted for Cleverly in the last leadership contestant.
Oh, so you were a relatively recent member then. You hung on. You kept the faith.
I tried to, but I've lost all faith in the party now.
Right.
I can't see where we're heading. I just don't get it anymore. As I said to your researcher, I feel politically homeless. I can't see anyone in the landscape at the moment that I really kind of want to lean towards or go towards. The Tory party, I think, is dying, and we're watching it completely implode.
What happened to it? What happened to it?
For me, the biggest turning point, actually, when I look back, and hindsight's a wonderful thing, was when we voted in Liz Truss.
Okay.
For me, Sunak, if he'd have stayed on as, well, in the first place, was voted in as the leader, I think that would have made us, or made the party, quite a better force. And I actually feel that going into the next general election with Sunak, where we obviously lost to Starmer, I think he would have had a bit more momentum behind him. And I actually felt that he was a better leader than the leader that we needed at the time.
But you know, that is such an interesting counterfactual, and it's one that gets overlooked quite a lot, isn't it? Because as a consequence of coming in after Truss, he felt like a caretaker of imminent defeat.
Yeah.
But if he'd actually had a fair crack of the whip himself, I mean, I remember that first speech, and then of course he ruined it all by putting Suella Braverman back in the Home Office. But he did for about three hours. It did look as if he was tacitly acknowledging what had gone before. I always had a sense of him sitting in 11 Downing Street, holding his nose about much of what was going on in 10, and recognising. I mean, he supported Brexit, which I personally struggled with, but you probably didn't. And
no.
That you can't keep relitigating that in the context of moving forward. It would have been an entirely different proposition, Sunak's leadership, if he'd won that leadership battle with Liz Truss.
Yeah, I believe so, and I really felt disappointed when he lost that. And funnily enough, so I live in the constituency at the time, which was under Cleverly's management, and he obviously backed Truss at the time, which lost.
Big Johnson fan as well. That's kind of when the curse of O'Brien kicked in. Is he went full Johnson. He got absolute Johnson derangement syndrome.
But it's not far off the sort of time I started listening to you, actually.
Yeah, don't blame me. Okay, here's one for you. Better not reaches the end of her road sooner rather than later. Who knows when? And actually, the Conservative membership, of which you are no longer one, are offered an opportunity to choose between Jenrick and Cleverly, or Jenrick and Tom Tugendhat, one of these sort of rare characters who feel like they belong to the same party that Michael Heseltine was deputy leader of, or the same party that even, you know, David Cameron was leader of. One of those politicians runs and wins. Is there a way back then? That may be a theory too far, but I'm asking you anyway.
Yeah, okay, well, I actually think that we're going to see a mass exodus of some of those MPs in the next 8 months anyway. I think some of them are going to float over to Reform, particularly after the...
I'm thinking of the ones that would never do that. James Cleverly would never do that. He said today or yesterday. So whatever is left with a sensible leader, even if we have to endure another national implosion like Brexit or Liz Truss's leadership and let Farage have a go with the keys to demonstrate what a disaster it would be, because people don't believe those of us who keep telling them what a disaster it would be, then the Tories have got a way back with a Cleverly or a...
Yeah, I mean, if a Cleverly-esque person was to lead the party, that would probably sort of turn my head I would definitely start looking at that. I think Cleverly, where he perhaps in the past was viewed as a right of centre politician under today's politics, would probably be considered more to the left, I think, in today's climate, which is bizarre to think.
Well, that's the Overton window, mate. That's literally you're looking through the Overton window, and there it is. He hasn't moved, but the window has. That's a brilliant point, actually, Sam. Thank you, and thank you for the call. 10:44 is the time. There are at least three stories in the news today about Brexit. Would you believe it? Three. And of course, some people still insist that you shouldn't be... some people who told you it was going to be brilliant keep insisting that you shouldn't be talking about it. You cannot have a sensible or informed conversation about British politics without mentioning our decision to become the first population in human history to impose enormous economic sanctions on ourselves and to make our country a place where racism was mainstreamed again. And I know lots of people who voted for it hate both of those consequences, but you were warned. So my sympathy is mitigated, limited, not non-existent, mitigated. But three stories in the news today. I doubt anybody now could tell me what they all are. You could probably tell me one, maybe two. And I've said at least, in case I've missed any, but three stories that you weren't aware of on Monday that are in the news on Wednesday, all linked to the absurdity of jumping off that particular cliff without a parachute, or at least with a parachute that you bought off Boris Johnson.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
I am shocked beyond belief at how open, rampant, widespread the support for Hamas is, the anti-Semitism is. It's overt and everywhere. And it really worries me. There are plenty of ways of making your voice heard without having to associate yourself with people like that.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on your radio. On our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Early Bird offers end Sunday in the Furniture Village sale with huge savings on many sofas, dining, beds and bedroom furniture. And that's on top of sale prices. Early Bird offers end this Sunday in the Furniture Village sale. And remember to order in time for Christmas.
Someone in the UK has got that Euro Millions feeling because they have won the incredible £26 million Euro Millions jackpot. I reckon they've had a bit of a dance. All around the house, then out the door, down the path and into the street. For all we know, they're probably still dancing. Go on, guys. Get that Euro Millions feeling. Euro Millions from the National Lottery. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
With the long, hot summer still fresh in the memory, it's easy to forget what's around the corner. Prepare your BMW for whatever the great British weather can muster with a BMW seasonal inspection. For just £39.99, our expert technicians will top up fluids and oil, check the essentials like tyres, wipers and battery, and return your BMW washed, vacuumed and winter ready. Search BMW seasonal inspection. T's and C's apply.
Amazon Prime Big Deal Days are here. 2 days of big deals on electronics, home, kitchen and more that'll make you feel less like and more like feel like a big deal. Amazon Prime Big Deal Days are the 7th and 8th of October. Exclusively for Prime members. Shop now.
How will you react if you win big with Win Plus?
I can't believe it!
Enter now at winplus.co.uk to get in the draw. 18 plus GB only, T's and C's apply.
For the nappies, peekaboos and tea parties. Mess, tantrums and sleepless nights. All those yo-yos, action figures and shinies. Lifts to mates, lifts to parties, lifts everywhere. For each and every one of those teenage years. Let's be honest, you probably owe your parents one. So tell them about pension credit. It could boost their pension income by an average of over £4,000 a year. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
James O'Brien on LBC. Text 84850.
10:48 is the time. I have a rather splendid missing word round for you. Okay, pay attention on this, because if you get it, then I'll give you the money myself. Chinese woman hospitalised after swallowing 8 blanks to ease back pain. Now, I suppose if you know an awful lot about Chinese medicine, you might be able to work this one out. So I'm going to disqualify you from joining in. Chinese woman hospitalised after swallowing 8 blanks to ease back pain. And top of the class to anybody who gets that correct. 10:48 is the time. I have completely forgotten to ask all of my callers so far whether or not they think we should take Kemi Badenoch's speech shortly after 11:15 today. I'm minded to stay with this conversation because I think it's really important for the time being. So we'll certainly carry it on over the news as we head towards speech time. A few of you are requesting that I take the speech live, but adorn it with my commentary with one of my commentary. The problem is that lightning doesn't strike twice. I'm not being conceited. I really, really enjoyed doing the commentary for Donald Trump's visit to Windsor Castle when he rode around King Charles's garden in a special golden carriage. There was so much material to work there with, and I had an enormous amount of fun doing it. And I know that you did too. You know, haters gonna hate. But it was like a lovely aligning of the planets. And some of the people who got in touch to tell me how much they enjoyed it actually know what they're talking about when it comes to comedy. But this is just a woman standing on a stage not doing gaffes. And also, there's my joke. That's my joke. It's gone. That's my one joke. Oh, it's a good job she doesn't do gaffes in case she did a gaffe. So she did a gaffe and I go, oh, that's a good job she doesn't do gaffes in my sort of Terry Wogan style voice. And that's it. That's the joke. This is one of the rare occasions where we do all appreciate the hive mind. Because we can't make our mind up. The producer, who normally thinks that I'm insulting her when I ask you what we should do next on the programme today, is very much of the view that it is quite fair and reasonable to ask you whether or not we should take this speech. And then, you know, Chris says, take the speech, I could do with a laugh. It probably won't be very funny. And if it's unintentionally funny, I mean, the one you wish you'd taken, and I can't remember whether we did or not. Do you remember the Theresa May speech where everything went wrong? And she had one of those appalling coughs. Did we took that one live, didn't we? Was I in the chair for that one? No, it was elsewhere on LBC. I can't even remember. But that was incredible. And if I told you all of the things that happened during that speech now, and you weren't paying full attention at the time, you would not believe me. Because you start off with the fact that she can't stop coughing, and someone comes onto the stage with a cough suite, and then some joker comes onto the stage with a P45, suggesting that she should hand in her resignation immediately. And you carry on like this, and then a letter fell off the thing behind her, the actual insignia behind her kept dropping off, as if it. I mean, that is the point where you think Anton Dekker up there. With the microphone and a button, a panel of buttons to make things happen. But it can't be that bad. It can't be that funny. And Theresa May didn't really say anything particularly bonkers or outrageous that day. But we took that one live. Oh, anyway, this is what the hive mind sounds like. If you've ever wanted to be a radio producer, here is your opportunity to step up to the plate and tell us why you think we should or should not take Kemi Badenoch's speech live, because it also is part of the conversation we're having about whether or not the Conservative Party is, to all intents and purposes, finished. And listen, it's a slightly self-selecting sample, this. Anyone can listen to the programme, but I do appreciate that if you've been wrong about absolutely everything over the last few years, it's not a very welcoming environment to ring in and talk about, well, if you're still clinging to the notion that you haven't been, but it's not a very welcoming environment to come into as a Brexit-supporting, Boris Johnson-loving, Liz Truss-championing Nigel Farage fan. The only one, of course, that you haven't been proved to be stupid about is Nigel Farage, which is why so many people are piling in behind him, because it's the only opportunity they have to pretend that they haven't been complete wazzocks on every major political decision of the last 10, almost 11 years. But I still want to know what you think about the Conservative Party, whether or not you think it's finished. Even as a former Conservative member, you're not prepared to admit that it's all your fault. Rebecca is in Glasgow. Rebecca, what would you like to say?
Hi. I think it is. It's not a good thing that the Conservatives are in a decline. And I've never voted Conservative. They kind of tempered the ugliness that we're hearing now. As soon as we started to pander to that, we're now finding ourselves with more extremes.
This is fascinating, because I talked about Ted Heath cutting Enoch Powell off at the knees, but I also remember, I think it was even Theresa May who talked about, we can't be the nasty party anymore. They recognised the dangers in those generations.
Yeah.
They recognised the dangers of letting the tiger out of the bag, didn't they? The racist tiger.
Yes, the problem is that what politicians don't understand is that most people are centrists. They may have some views that are slightly to the right or slightly to the left, but when policies are running basically to the centre, things do run better in people's lives. Now, the Tories have shot themselves in the foot over half a century ago in Scotland. And they do still have representatives in the Scottish Parliament or down in Westminster. However, these same representatives won't even put Conservative on the leaflets they throw through our doors. We have elections coming up next year, and the MSPs, who are Tories, are still putting leaflets through the door without their party name on it. Now, if they're ashamed to be Tories, why would anybody else want to vote for a party that their own representatives are ashamed to be part of?
Well, they're a bit like Anna's dad, aren't they? Is that they can't quite conceive of voting for anybody else, even when they know what's going on. Because it's tribal. It's like trying to change football team.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, the thing is, the governments that are running things right now are paying for what's been kicked into the grass for decades.
Yes.
We went through the heydays of Tony Blair's government, and we all hark back to those good days. However,
back to Thatcher.
They do, yes.
So, you know, but both work generationally, don't they?
When, you know, Tony Blair basically gave everything out on PFIs. We're still paying for those PFIs. And in Scotland, when the budget comes in, a huge amount of that is cut off for PFIs. The local governments as well are still paying for these PFIs, but the party that's in charge will be blamed for the cuts. And it doesn't matter who takes over, there's always going to be these debts that come up. So when Farage, if he gets in, once he's dealt with everybody like me who has a little brown tinge to her skin or a black tinge to their skin or an accent, once they're all shipped out and he's still not managing to balance the books and he's still not able to do anything, then the people who voted him in are the ones that are going to suffer. We're seeing it with Trump. There's a lady that I am in touch with in America, and her business is broken because of the tariffs. There's one company in America I will buy from, but they are paying the tariffs for customers in Canada and the UK to keep their business. And the thing is, it's going to happen here. The loud voices are getting the support right now, but they're still going to hurt the people that vote for them.
So this is brilliant. What an extraordinary bunch of calls I've had today, because what you've reminded us of, or possibly we've realised for the first time listening to you, is that the populism's always there. It's always there. It's why Cameron called the referendum, because he thought that he could head off the populism with realism. And for a variety of reasons, A, being a bit rubbish at it, B, putting someone in charge of the whole campaign who was also rubbish, and C, having a leader of the opposition who was at least as rubbish as the other two men, it didn't happen. Realism didn't get a look in, because propagandists and populists can always say, I will give you something brilliant tomorrow, and however hard you work to describe what you've got today, they can always say, no, I've got something better. So that knowledge that they're always there, nibbling away at the edges of reality, waiting for an opportunity, whether it's a refugee crisis or a recession or cost of living, waiting for an opportunity to come galloping in and blaming it all on foreigners, whether you're Enoch Powell or Nigel Farage or Stephen Yaxley-Lennon. Everyone's known it's always there, and the Tories are dead because they've walked into it. They've taken it, that rhetoric, they've taken that politics by the hand rather than trying to contain it.
Until they become more of a centrist party.
Well, I don't even think that's the right word. I don't even think centrist works. I know what you mean by that word. But they just have to abandon the racism, really. They can still be economically very right-wing.
Well, everybody. I think if most people want a government that is socially fair and, you know, a little bit harder on things like crime and things like that. That's what people really want. And, you know, when the Tories return to what people recognise as the Tories, they'll still have their opposition, but they might have a chance of returning. But until then, we're going to hurt.
Who could look at them today?
For years to come just now.
Who could look at them today and say that Enoch Powell popped up in Wolverhampton delivering the speech that he gave back in the day? He'd become persona non grata immediately with the Conservatives. I mean, nobody would be able to argue that, would they?
No.
Honest Bob Jenrick will probably have a go at him for not going far enough. Ah, wow, thank you. I mean, the one element of it may be that I don't fully buy into, but that is there. The idea that there's any way back at all. And, of course, I think we are mostly centrist. The one bit I don't buy in is, well, you're right that people think they want us to be tougher on crime, but actually that's another example of where propaganda and populism has got us. We're incredibly tough on crime as a country. We've got longer sentences than a lot of comparable economies, lock people up for a lot longer than is wise, reoffending is off the charts, the massive majority or a ridiculous proportion of people in prison have special educational needs or dyslexia or even illiteracy. Fix those and the prison numbers come rocketing down, but the Daily Mail front page will be telling you that we've all gone woke. It's 11 o'clock.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock, Hamas says it's exchanged with Israel a list of the names of hostages and prisoners to be released under a proposed Gaza deal. A senior official says the group is optimistic about ongoing talks in Egypt under Donald Trump's peace plan. The president's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, and special envoy Steve Witkoff are set to join the negotiations in Sharm el-Sheikh. Sky's international correspondent, Alex Rossi, says it's an encouraging sign.
Their reputation, if you like, is on the line. These guys wouldn't be heading there unless they thought it would bear fruit. You're also seeing the big guns coming from Qatar as well, the Prime Minister and the head of Turkish intelligence. Again, all signs that we may be near a deal.
A Tory frontbencher has accused the government of spiking the prosecution of two men accused of spying for China. The charges against Christopher Cash and Christopher Berry, who both denied the allegations, were dropped last month. Prosecutors say it's because Beijing was not labelled as a national security threat. Alicia Kearns, a vocal critic of China, has told LBC it doesn't make sense.
The CPS have been very clear. In 2023, the evidential basis was met under a Conservative government. So the question is, what has changed? Because Ken McCollum, the head of MI5, in 2023, he talked about how the epic scale of China's espionage. Tom Tugendhat, as the Conservative security minister, called China a threat to our national security.
Downing Street has denied the government was involved in the collapse of the case. You can hear the full interview with Alicia Kearns with Sheila Fogarty this afternoon from 1 on LBC. Kemi Badenoch will focus on the economy as she closes the Conservative Party conference shortly. The Tories have sought to put a stronger economy and stronger borders at the centre of the agenda in Manchester. She will set out a new golden rule designed to reduce the deficit. A second man has been arrested over an arson attack at a mosque in East Sussex. The 25-year-old's being questioned in connection with the attack in Peacehaven on Saturday night. The first suspect has been released on bail. The government's reportedly drawn up plans to raise the amount the NHS pays for medicines. The proposals follow months of talks with the Trump administration aimed at avoiding another wave of damaging tariffs. The Science Minister, Lord Valance, warned last month that drug price rises would be necessary. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was trading at 95.39. That is up 55. The pound buys $1.34 and a €1.15. LBC weather, dry with sunny spells for many places, a few light showers in the northwest, a high of 18 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search, don't get caught out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's 3 minutes after 11. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Two little things that speak directly to... Is that annoying, that turn of phrase? I never used to say it. Speak to. Something speaks to something. So, you know, the violence that we saw at the football last night speaks to a broader national decline. I really like it as a figure. A figure of speech, is that the right word? I really like it as a phraseology. I think it really works. I've caught myself using it all the time because it fits a... It does a job that other words don't do. But if I don't know if it's annoying. Is it up there with kind of management speak or gobbledygook about, you know, emissions and... I don't know. Anyway, these two interventions from two people I admire enormously in the sphere of public commentary and academe. Yeah. Really, really address... That's probably better, isn't it? They really address some of the points that have been raised in the first hour of the programme. So one of the things that Badenoch is poised to do today is to make it harder for your child to go to university. She's expected to announce plans to cut the number of UK university places by about 100,000. And that, as Gabby Hinsliff, a brilliant columnist and writer, to be found chiefly at The Guardian, she points out that they have gone from middle-class parents wanting their kids to go to university as their target audience to old people who didn't go to university and don't see what anyone else should either. And they'll dress it up as they always do in talk about apprenticeships, but the bottom line here is that it won't be her children that she is thinking shouldn't be going to university any more than it was Joe Johnson's children that he was thinking of when he introduced policies years ago as educator. He was one of the good guys, don't get me wrong. When he introduced policies years ago that were designed to address similar themes, it won't be their children who are being crossed off the list of kids who might go to university, it'll be yours. But that's a brilliant point from Gabby Hinsliff. The target voter used to be parents like mine. Parents who didn't go to university but wanted their children to. That is the politics of aspiration. That is the politics of small-c conservatism. Tony Blair ate their lunch. That's another figure of speech I'm probably overusing at the moment. Tony Blair parked his tanks on that particular lawn, didn't he, with the education, education, education mantra that was tripping off his lips more regularly than almost anything else in 1997. But that is a brilliant observation from Gabby Hinsliff, that it used to be about aspiration and middle class or upper working class parents who wanted their children to go to university. Kemi Badenoch is going to make it less likely that that happens because she is now chasing older voters who didn't go into higher education and don't see why anybody else should either, even though they now largely pay for it themselves. So the old argument, which was brought home to me on the shop floor of Aquascutum in about 1992, when a chap who was on the permanent staff, and I was there as student temporary staff, was personally annoyed with me, which is a perfectly reasonable response, but not for the national tax laws. He was personally annoyed with me that the tuition fees that I was not required to pay at that point in human history as an undergraduate at the London School of Economics were being met in part by his tax contributions, to the point where he got his actual payslip. I think he'd had a good lunch. He came back from lunch, he got his actual payslip out and started sort of pointing at the note, go, you see? And I said, well, I don't get all, that's not all going to me, mate. There's loads of us, there's loads of students. But he was very cross about it, because he hadn't been to university and he didn't see why on earth his tax money should have been spent on other people going. That's not even the case anymore. I mean, it was a bit daft then, unless, of course, he never needed the ministrations of people whose jobs demanded degrees, like, oh, I don't know, doctors. So it was a pretty stupid point then, but it's an even more stupid point now when you pay your own tuition fees, in large part. So that's point one about how far the Tory party has moved. This one, I had to do a double take at. This is from Rob Ford, who is an academic at the University of Manchester, a politics professor at the University of Manchester, has written some brilliant books. Another one of those really annoying people who's hardly ever wrong about anything, unlike one of his former collaborators. A reminder of how the Conservative Party of 1978, when there was more widespread racial prejudice in public than there is now, approached the issue of race and national identity. So they had a poster that featured a black man in a business suit saying, Labour says he's black, Tories say he's British. And Rob points out that in 1978, you could say to the Labour Party, you're a black person, to the Conservative Party, you're a British citizen. In 2025, particularly after yesterday's revelations, to the Labour Party and the vast majority of the public, you're a British citizen, to Robert Jenrick's Conservatives, you're a black person. This is because if you're not white, you can't possibly be integrated, as he concluded when he was in Handsworth, making a film featuring exclusively white people while simultaneously claiming that he hadn't met any. I just think that's really interesting. It's a bigger... what's the word I want? It's a bigger trajectory than just Boris Johnson or 2019 or Dominic Cummings or the racism that they've now largely embraced. It is 9 minutes after 11. So here are the questions. Is the Tory party definitely finished? 0345 60 60 973. If so, why? If not, why not? And should I take Kemi Badenoch's speech in 5 minutes' time? I'm going to insist that you answer that one. But first, you can go for the top two questions. James is in Southampton. James, what would you like to say?
Well, to answer your Kemi Badenoch question, I don't think we should.
I mean, put my feet up, though. I can make a cup of tea. I have a toastie.
We have said the cause are good this morning, though, so keep them coming.
See, everyone's a producer now, aren't they? He's right, you see. If the cause had been rubbish, I'd take the speech.
Just to point out, Kemi Badenoch, I think, is the first leader who's been kind enough to do her speech during your show.
I got a mention last year. No, not from her, from Jenrick, I think, isn't it? Anyway, go on.
I'd love to have heard a Led Dem speech on your show, but he did it on Sheila's, I think, so never mind.
There you go, swings and roundabouts. What do you reckon? Are they done?
I'd like to think so, yeah. I mean, I, as a former voter as well.
Member or just voter?
Up until spoiling my ballot in the 2019 election, I didn't see any viable choices to vote for in that year.
Fair enough.
I think Brexit was the first thing that went wrong, and I'd say Boris Johnson, to use a scientific analogy, was the catalyst.
Mm.
And for the catalyst, Liz Truss is an even more powerful catalyst.
Are you sure about that? I mean, obviously you're right in the terms of your own personal journey, but. I don't know. I think now, if you put everybody under hypnosis, people would not really even remember Liz Truss. The ones whose mortgage got smacked would remember their mortgages getting smacked. But I don't know that her name or her face would appear in many people's consciousnesses.
True. Well, it's difficult to forget as somebody who used to... if you took me to the doctors in the late 2010s and got me diagnosed, I'd probably be diagnosed with football vacation. I was still a naive, like, 20-something in those days and probably bought into all the stuff. But, I mean... It was more liberal in those days, though.
Yes.
Would you imagine someone like Honest Bob Jenrick trying to get gay marriage through now, for example, equal marriage?
No,
exactly that.
We may be doing him a grave disservice, but it seems unlikely that anyone who used the word woke as a pejorative would have been on board for those sort of policies.
Exactly, yes. I probably did get swept into all the austerity things back in the early 2010s and thinking that was a good thing. The economy wasn't doing that badly. I mean, I think that was partly mainly to do with the fact we were still in the EU and had that economic benefit, because that has really sort of...
How did you vote last year?
Liberal Democrat.
Oh.
Even though we do have a really good local MP who's a Conservative here in the outer suburbs of Southampton. But
Is there a way back for your old team?
Not until a cup run,
James, a decent cup run, even if they're not going to win the league.
Well, it was funny. I think it was last year. You had Sweller Braverman doing one of your holiday covers, and I was like, "Oh, but I'll give this 10 minutes and see."
Yes.
And she just started talking. I was like, "I'll have to pull the car over, make a list, and ring her up and say and challenge her on so many of these things." She was some of the codswallop she was coming out with, but. No, but this is exactly an embodiment of why I'm not voting for any time soon.
Well, I might do the same with Badenoch. I said I don't need to pull the car over and make a list. I can just cut into the speech and point some stuff out. But, that's interesting, because that actually introduces an element to the conversation that's been missing so far, in that the Tories could only do all of the things that they've done with the connivance, at least, and the absolute complicity and cheerleading, at most, of almost all of the UK media. Because I do, marvelling at how they got away with all the awfulness until it all fell apart under Boris Johnson. But the simplest reason for why they got away with it, and in fact why it's not entirely fair to blame Conservative Party members for causing all the chaos, is because their morning newspaper or their favourite pretend television station or their favourite radio presenters were all in on the grift, in on the con, or too stupid to see what was going to happen.
Don't even get me started on any of that.
Well, it's an important point, though, isn't it? Because, I mean, we can sit here being a bit condescending and saying, "God, how could you be so stupid?" But you've got people queuing up from the Telegraph down, telling them that this isn't stupid at all.
Well, you see him walking around the shop with the Daily Mail in their trolley, and I have to bite my lip.
I see him walking around the office, mate. You think you've got it bad. It's 10:30, it's 11:30. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Thank you, James. He doesn't mean Caroline Notes. Suella Braverman did do my holiday cover, I think, on more than one occasion. It's coming out to 11:15. So, listen, we'll take the beginning of the speech. Oh, that's disgusting. There's only four Union flags in the background. God, she's typical. God, what a traitor. Why does she hate our country? She's only got four Union flags up in the background. As far as I can see, maybe more will appear. Like, kind of, I don't know, props rising from below the stage as she walks. More flags. More flags. Do you know, right-wing politicians and flags are a bit like people that work for razor companies. I don't know if you've ever picked up on this before, but I would love to work for a razor company, because if you work for a razor company, all you have to do every couple of years to get promoted is sit around the boardroom table and say, I've had a rather good idea, chaps. You know, our current razor has four blades. It's the best a man can get. We've got a brilliant razor and it is super. I've had a brilliant idea. Why don't we launch a new product in January that has got, and you might want to sit down for this, five blades. Seriously, if we launched the razor, because you remember when we were kids, they only had one blade. And then a genius, the one that we all revere, the king of the razors, said two blades. And then a few years ago, I was still a kid, only just started shaving, they introduced three blades. Now we've got four blades. What if we went to five blades? Give the man a cigar. That's how right-wing politicians are with flags now. So somebody in the Tory party high command said we should definitely have a Union flag on the stage. And they went, yes, good idea. Well done, Tristram. And then somebody else said, well, I think we should have two. And they went, yeah, Tristram, you traitor. Why do you only want one flag, you poxy woke loser? And then somebody else said, I think we should have three flags. Three flags. And the bloke who suggested two is sitting there gnashing his teeth and going, I hate you. I hate you, Felicity. Why did you suggest three flags? But they ended up with four. And at that point, the speech began. And wouldn't it have been brilliant if that actually had happened and I timed it to perfection? I think they're standing up. Well, let's go and have a listen. Should we have a little listen to the national anthem? I would say that the familiarity with the lyrics reminds me of footballers. Actually, that's probably not fair on footballers. Some of them seem to know the words. But there are the closing bars of God Save the King, the United Kingdom's timeless and deeply moving national anthem. Various people who you've never heard of and will likely never hear of again are currently applauding as Kemi Badenoch, a woman who would never be Prime Minister, prepares to deliver a speech in which she is required to pretend that one day she might be.
The Conservative Party is under new leadership. From now on, we are going to be telling the British people the truth, even when it is difficult to hear. Fulfilling the role.
It's a video. It's a video. Good Lord, I thought that she'd come up from below the stage like Taylor Swift. I thought she'd popped up through a trapdoor and just started.
We are winning for.
100% sure it's a video. Thank God for that. I thought I'd. Well, I didn't mind because, you know. But crashing the beginning of the speech is not going to get me the big gigs when Dimbleby hangs up his headphones or Clive Myrie decides to take the day off. And that is, of course, what we are in the business of pursuing every time there is a major event. Not that this is a major event, but you take my point. Anyway, this is a video.
Be a leader, not a lawyer.
No politician alone can build lasting prosperity. That comes from business, from
being
innovation.
A leader, not a lawyer, of course, was one of the lines that emerged during Donald Trump's state visit, where being a leader apparently involves being incoherent, unpleasant and wrong, while being a lawyer involves being coherent, fair-minded and often right. They should have warned us.
Please welcome to the leader of the Conservative Party, Kemi Badenoch.
Be still my beating heart. It's on, lads. She's coming. Is she going to dance on stage like Theresa May? They're all getting to their feet. And here she is, waving with one hand. Hands together, look serious. Smile and wave. Wave and smile. Approach podium.
Thank you.
Do Genuflect before flags. I made that last bit up. For now. And sit back and enjoy.
Thank you. Thank you, conference. Thank you. Thank you, conference. Only the Conservative Party can deliver the stronger economy and stronger borders that will give people a more prosperous future. Every generation must face its test. In the 1940s, our test was to defeat fascism and ensure the victory of freedom. In the 1980s, it was to banish socialism and deliver prosperity. And in the 2020s, our test is to restore a strong economy, secure our borders, and rebuild Britain's strength so our children inherit a country that works.
Can't help thinking about the country that Keir Starmer inherited
in
2025.
Ladies and gentlemen, conference, thank you. Thank you for standing by the only party that can meet the test of our generation. The only party that can deliver a stronger economy and stronger borders. Everything else relies on getting this right. National security, order on the streets, decent healthcare, high quality education, cohesion in our communities. None of this exists without a strong economy and strong borders. A weak economy makes us poorer. The services we rely on get worse, and people cannot build a better life for themselves or their families. Weak borders allow people to exploit our generosity, put our housing and public services under pressure, and fracture our sense of who we are as a nation. A weak economy and weak borders means steady decline. I reject that fate.
There's no way we're going to take them to this, isn't there? We're not live already. What? Oh, no, how embarrassing. How long are we going to do this?
Together, we Conservatives will save Britain from that fate. And we can do it together because we are a strong team. My fantastic shadow cabinet, Mel, Chris, Claire, Laura, Rob, Andrew, both of them, James, both of them, Mims, Jesse Stewart, all of you, thank you. Thank you so much. My front bench, experienced hands and rising stars, conference, we know our MPs and peers have more collective wisdom than the rest of Parliament put together.
14 years. 14 years.
And it's...
Oh, wow.
It's
maybe
not
we'll
just
stay
them.
For a bit longer.
Let's not forget Darren and our MSs in Wales, Russells, and our MSPs in Scotland, our fantastic mayors. Labour beater, Ben Houchin. Reform slayer, Paul Bristow. Councillors, activists, you are our party, thank you.
I think I know what's going on here, I'll tell you in a bit.
I joined our party as an activist 20 years ago. I was with you delivering leaflets, knocking on doors. I sat in this hall listening to speeches. I celebrated all our wins and I felt the pain of every defeat. I cannot tell you now how honored, how privileged and how proud I am to stand before you as leader of our party, leader of the Conservative Party, the only party that can meet the test of our generation. And you are more than just a political party to me. You have supported me, you have stood by me, you have enabled me to achieve more than I ever dreamed. You are my family, in many ways, quite literally. I married the deputy chairman of my association. And I... I certainly would not be standing here today without my husband, Hamish. Thank you, Hal.
Spoiler alert, it's a victory lap.
I love this party for
without
what it has
any victory.
Given. But more than that, I love it because it has made life better for so many in our country and will do so again. Time and time again, guided by our values and our principles, we have steered this country through its darkest days. And today, we must be ready to do the same again. Because we are the only party that has the vision, the courage, and the competence to tear up a broken political model, deliver a new blueprint for our country, and together take Britain into an era of prosperity and security.
It's a very odd flex, isn't it, to move effortlessly from mentioning that you joined the party that's been in power for 14 of the last 15 years, 20 years ago, and have worked tirelessly to support it, and then describe the political system we've ended up with as broken.
Because they are not the same ones that we faced in the 1940s, or the 1980s, or even the 2010s. The country that Hamish and I were born in had its issues, but thanks, in large part, to hard choices taken by this party, opportunity was there for people who worked hard. People had a sense of pride in our national story and excitement about the future. I'm not so sure young people feel that way anymore. They feel they are living somewhere where things never get any better. Britain is stagnating while the world around us moves on. We are competing with restless and ambitious countries around the world. We are competing with a billion people in India striving to become middle class. We are competing with economic success stories like Poland. 15 years ago, Polish workers came here to find opportunity. Now, Poland is growing twice as fast as we are. While Britain was redefining what a woman is, China was building 5 nuclear reactors.
Obviously, it's a choice that all governments face, building nuclear reactors or looking at legislation surrounding LGBTQ
people.
You can't do both.
People are determined to lift their lives and their children's lives up to a standard that we have taken for granted. Some countries won't be able to do this. And in those countries, millions of people will decide that they want to come here instead.
Unlike Poland.
And if our borders are not secure, they will succeed. Especially if our economy is addicted to migration. Of course we want brilliant minds and great talents to come here, but at the moment we are not just taking in doctors and engineers and scientists, we are accepting hundreds of thousands of people, some with many dependents, some with no skills at all. This broken immigration model is heaping pressure on our public sector. A public sector which already, every year, demands more and more and more of our money. Yet services don't get better, they get worse. Everyone in this room knows what I'm talking about. We have all felt it. We used to ring up our GP and get an appointment the same day. Now we have to wait on the phone to see if we're one of the lucky ones. We have potholes that have been around for so long, people are holding birthday parties for them.
Oh, fair play, I hate potholes,
but
actually.
Underneath no, that's fair. Is a society which is struggling to cope. Struggling to cope with the reality of getting poorer. Struggling to cope with the erosion of a sense of who we are as a country. We cannot drift our way into solving these problems. We know what drift looks like. It looks like allowing the trade unions to overturn years of progress in school standards. It looks like letting our veterans face vexatious prosecutions when we should be worrying about the strength of our military. Drift looks like Labour's one-in-one-out returns deal with France that ends up letting 100 people in for everyone who leaves. Being timid will get us nowhere. We need bold ideas. We need a positive vision for this country and a plan to deliver it. We need a new approach. A new approach that delivers a stronger economy and stronger borders. We owe that to our children. During our time in government, we did great things. Labour want to pretend the last 14 years were all bad. They want to forget that they were losing all that time. Let's remind them. Between 2010 and 2020, we slashed the deficit. We lifted millions of people out of tax and got millions into work. We sent English schools soaring up the international league tables. We led the coalition against Russia's invasion of Ukraine. The conference, the truth is, we didn't always fight hard enough for what we believed in. We need to remember who we are fighting for. We are fighting for people who work hard and do the right thing. We are fighting for people who ask, why do sickness benefits pay more than the minimum wage? More than the living wage, even. We are fighting for small
government
business
debt.
Owners,
we need to double check some of this stuff. And get things under the period she described as the deficit having been slashed, UK government debt reached the highest level it has been at since the 1960s. But, you know, here we go.
We are fighting for the victims of crime. They want to know that we are on their side, that criminals will face the full force of the law. We are fighting for the farmers, putting food on our tables. These are our people, Conference. They are the backbone of our country. We fought for them before, and we will fight for them again. Conference, time and time again, we have been the only party that is bold enough to do what is needed, the only party that is competent enough to do it properly. We were bold enough to create the modern police force, to introduce free state education for every child. We were radical enough to launch the right to buy, to free the workplace from the dead hand of the state, to give working men the vote, and better late than never, women too.
I think she's trying to take the credit for something there that happened in 1828, which is, I mean, it's a curious mixture of bold and
we were courageous
inevitable,
enough
probably.
To introduce same-sex marriage. And, of course, we were brave enough to take Britain out of the European Union, honouring the biggest democratic mandate in our history.
I actually loved it. To go from comparing us to Poland and wondering why Poland is performing so much better economically than we are, and then to invite a round of applause for enacting one of the main reasons why is genius.
All of that was us. But enough about past glories. Actually, how about one more? Conference, do you know the one thing we Conservatives have done the most throughout our history? Clear up the mess left by Labour.
Patient satisfaction with the NHS in 2010 was the highest it had ever been since Beccles began. It's currently, I think, the lowest.
And my goodness, they are making one hell of a mess. Never in the field of human history have so many been let down by so few.
I mean, if in doubt, bolder eyes at Winston Churchill quote,
all
I suppose.
All they have delivered is a doom loop of higher taxes, weaker borders, and month after month of chaos. They had a plan to win, but no plan for power, no vision for Britain. They know how to make promises, but not how to deliver them. This year, the Prime Minister was asked to name his best moment in office. Do you know what he said? Walking into Downing Street. For once, I agree with him. It's been downhill all the way since. What have Labour given us? An anti-corruption minister under investigation for corruption. A homelessness minister who made her own tenants homeless. A housing secretary sacked for dodging housing taxes. You couldn't make this stuff up.
Of course, under the last three Conservative governments, they'd all still be in the job, and Boris Johnson would be sending out messages instructing his colleagues to form a ring around the ministers who've broken the rules, rather than getting rid of them.
Sent abroad to lie for their country. Well, at least in Peter Mandelson, they had a man of experience.
Jacob Rees-Mogg, of course, sent to Balmoral to lie to the Queen by Boris Johnson. I mean, listen, I have my views, but this is absolutely extraordinarily awful. And I think our decision at 10 o'clock this morning to discuss just whether or not the Tory party is done is looking prescient.
The Minister failing to rule out the tax rises we all know are coming. The Mayor of Manchester touting his own manifesto for the country. But to be honest, I can't blame Andy Burnham for that one. Who doesn't want to get rid of this utterly useless, weak Prime Minister? After 5 years as Labour leader, people still don't know what Keir Starmer stands for. And you know what the real problem is? He doesn't know himself. Today we learn that Labour deliberately collapsed the trial of two men accused of spying on MPs for China because the Prime Minister wants to suck up to Beijing. This is squalid. We have got the measure of them, conference. Just look at Shabana Mahmood, the new Home Secretary. She's trying to convince us that she's tough. Right.
What was that? What happened there?
I remember when Shabana Mahmood tried to stop foreign criminals being deported. Do you remember that, Rob? I remember when she lay down on the ground in front of a Sainsbury's protesting because they were selling food from Israel. So forgive me if I treat this newfound tough image with a little scepticism.
I mean, one of those things has nothing whatsoever to do with the other, but I don't think you're supposed to stop and think about these things.
Everything.
Anyway, well done for starting the police force in 1828.
Rachel Reeves likes to congratulate herself for breaking the glass ceiling. What she's really broken is our economy. Attacking those who work hard, destroying business confidence, forcing wealth creators to leave the country, piling debt onto our children. We know that in her November budget of doom, she will give us all something to cry about. The highest business taxes since the 1970s, taxes on farmers, taxes on education, an unprecedented tax punishing parents who work hard to invest in their children's future. Shameful. The tax burden is so high, it is making Britain poorer because business is giving up. Business is leaving. And as they leave, or never start in the first place, people's livelihoods, people's hopes, people's dreams go with them. Grangemouth Refinery, gone. Merck, BMW, Ineos, pulling investment. Schools for children with special needs are shutting their doors. Farmers feeling they've got no way out. The London Stock Exchange dropping out of the world's top 20 for listings. Our party knows that a job is the best route out of poverty. We got unemployment to a 40-year low. And what has happened since Labour came in? A jobs tax. Unemployment up. Inflation up. Borrowing up. These are the real-life consequences of a weak, directionless government. conference last year, the public voted for change. But all they have been given is change for the worse. And because they are still angry with us, parties that in normal times would never be seen as a serious option for government are gaining ground, making promises they will never be able to keep. Let's look at what's on offer out there for all those disappointed by Labour. Reform promising free beer tomorrow. Jeremy Corbyn promising free jam. Lib Dems promising free lentils. All of them promising more spending, blowing up the public finances. Whether it's Starmer, Farage, Corbyn or Davy, all these men are shaking the same magic money tree. Following the same failed playbook, no plan for growth, no honesty about the scale of the challenges, and it always leads to the same result. More government, more taxes, more debt. It is irresponsible, it's cynical, and it's why Britain needs Conservatives back in charge.
I've left it so long, we can't really pull out now. Also, I presume a division is on the way, isn't it? As opposed to just the critique of, I don't know, Keir Starmer for not having cleared up the mess he inherited yet. So I think, and apologies for this, I promise I'll be particularly charming and hilarious when we come back at the end of this. But we're going to have to listen to all of it.
As George Bernard Shaw said, never wrestle with a pig. You both get dirty and the pig likes it. We have to offer something better. So what are we going to do? Conference, as you may have heard, I am an engineer. My starting point is always to carry out a diagnosis before producing the blueprint to put it right. Since I became your leader, my shadow cabinet and I have analysed the problems facing the country. Our diagnosis is clear. Britain is being held back by a broken model. A model which says the government always knows best, that high immigration is always good for the economy, that Britain should apologise for its history rather than be proud of it. We lost because we accepted the status quo no more. When Margaret Thatcher was leader of the opposition, she said this: if every Labour government is prepared to reverse every Tory measure, while Conservative governments accept nearly all socialist measures, the end result is only too plain. She was right. To fix our country, we must reverse Labour's measures. So, we will cancel their vindictive tax on education. Yeah. Yeah. Vicky knows what's coming. We will scrap their tax on family farms.
That'll be the VAT on school fees. Andrew, and the inheritance tax still being half what other companies have to pay.
We will scrap their tax on family businesses.
It's more inheritance tax cuts.
And we will reverse the terrible measures in Angela Rayner's unemployment bill, written by the unions, for the unions, a bill that will wrap firms in red tape, cost business £5 billion, and make Angela Rayner probably one of the last people in Britain to ever be legally sacked.
When she says unions, it's always important to remember that that translates as workers, as opposed to wealth or owners. I don't know why I bother explaining this stuff. Does anyone in that room understand it?
We are Conservatives, not anarchists. I am an engineer, not an arsonist. So together, thank you.
Laura Trott looks very much like she doesn't understand what better.
We are creating a blueprint for Britain, a new settlement based on Conservative values.
Hurrah. You know you've got a loyal listenership, James, writes Steve, when you can play out this drivel and know that people will stay tuned.
securing our borders.
Oh,
on Sunday, I announced our plan to take the UK out of the ECHR, to scrap the Human Rights Act, to deport 150,000 illegal immigrants. This is a plan, not a slogan. Next in my blueprint, work and welfare. If we want to end our over-reliance on immigration, then we must make sure that every British citizen who can work does work. Right now, there are 6.5 million working-age adults claiming benefits instead of working. You heard me right, 6.5 million. That is the entire population of Cardiff and Belfast and Glasgow and Manchester combined, being paid to sit at home all day. We cannot expect people to get up and go to work and pay more and more in taxes to subsidize millions of others not to work. It should not be controversial to say this. Conference, we have done the hard work and we have a plan to cut welfare spending. First, British benefits for British citizens. It is common sense that you should not draw out of a system that you haven't paid into. Second, we will restrict benefits to those with the more severe mental health conditions, not anxiety or mild depression. Yes, these challenges are real and people should get support, but they cannot be treated as a reason for a lifetime off work. And third, we will restrict motability vehicles to people with serious disabilities. Those cars are not for people with ADHD.
Well, that's a targeting that will surprise precisely nobody.
These are the first steps of a radical reform of our welfare system. We will return it to its founding principle that support only goes to those that really need it. This should be common sense, but only the Conservatives understand this. Labour, Lib Dems, Greens, the Nationalists and Reform are all demanding more welfare spending. They don't care that it's not fair, but we do.
I will be inviting your calls in response to this speech shortly, not least because I need the company.
After COVID, 2,000 people a day were being signed onto out-of-work sickness benefits. It is a national tragedy that in just 1 year of labour, the latest figure has more than doubled. 5,000 new people are signing on each and every single day. Many are young people who are losing the chance to make something of themselves, never knowing what it's like to pay their own way. This isn't just about saving money, important though that is. It's far more than that. It is driven by our deep conservative conviction that work is a good in itself.
It's actually sunk cost fallacy. That's why I have to take the whole speech. I never should have started, but now I'm in, I can't get out.
And as people work, as they strive, as they provide for themselves and their families, they should not pay more and more of their money in taxes to a state that provides less and less. So fixing the state is next in our blueprint. Since Brexit and COVID, the size of the civil service has swollen by over a third. There are now more than 500,000 civil servants. And have you noticed? Is government working a third better for you? I don't think so. So we are going to reverse this. We are going to cut the civil service back to where it was in 2016. And as Conservatives, we don't just believe in reducing the size of the state. I have always said that while government should do less, what it does, it should do well. Let me give you an example. Conservatives are proud of our police. Unlike Labour, we will always have their back. But security and prosperity cannot exist in a country where the law is mocked, where crime is ignored. and where criminals laugh at justice. Right now, tens of thousands of police hours are wasted every year on non-crime hate incidents and form filling. Officers chasing tweets instead of thieves. The Shadow Justice Secretary is stopping more fare evaders than Transport for London. Thank you, Rob. Conference, we are going to free the police to protect the public, not to chase political correctness.
We're going to probably spend half an hour working out a million different ways to say, but all of the problems you're describing right now were created by you and your colleagues, aren't we?
800,000 hours every single year waiting with mental health patients. 800,000 hours. That's the equivalent of 400 police officers doing nothing else all year except waiting around. No more. Every single officer we free from pointless paperwork, we will put back on our streets. We will send them after the shoplifters, making life a misery for high streets. And we will triple stop and search, because the more people we stop, the more people we search, the more knives we take off the streets.
I don't know why I bother, but it was Theresa May who explained to the Police Federation that cutting police numbers wouldn't affect crime or crime detection.
To make things work better. In the NHS, industrial action has kept waiting lists high for far too long. Enough is enough. We will ban doctors from going on strike.
Good luck with that, mate.
In education, Labour have bent over to the teaching unions and are removing our academy freedoms, which have been so successful. We will reverse this act of educational vandalism, and we will make sure that brilliant schools and teachers have the freedom to do what they do best, teach.
I know I'm repeating myself, but this is actually surreal. So you describe a country being broken, and all you've got to do by way of a vision is to promise to undo all of the things that the new person has done, which aren't even much anyway.
The skills you need to get on in life. It should ensure you get the job you want. So, if your name's Rachel, you can be an economist instead of working in customer complaints.
She's not the only one who's had a go at being funny. I suppose it's better than having a go at being a
ventriloquist. Let's talk about university.
Here we go.
Every year, thousands of young people go off to university.
Remember, this is your children she's talking about, not her.
With crippling debt and no real prospects. Nearly one in three graduates see no economic return. And every year, taxpayers write off over £7 billion in unpaid student loans. Wasted money, wasted talent. That's every year. A rigged system propping up low-quality courses while people can't get high-quality apprenticeships that lead to real jobs. And this is personal for me. I did two degrees, one in engineering, one in law. But I also had an apprenticeship first. And while I can't remember how to do parallel integration, I can remember how to fix a broken computer, which I learned to do during my apprenticeship. I was working with adults, I was paying my own way, and it gave an 18-year-old me a self-confidence that my university degrees never did. And unlike my degrees, I wasn't left with any debt. So we will shut down rip-off courses and use the money to double the apprenticeship budget. We'll be giving thousands more young people the chance of a proper start in life, just like I had. Which brings me, conference, to the most important task that we will face and the centrepiece of our blueprint. The reason why the Conservative Party is the only party in Britain who can be trusted to meet the test of our generation is that none of this works without a strong economy. Securing our borders, getting people into work, policing our streets, defending the nation, none of it is possible without the money to pay for it. And we are the only party with a plan to get our economy back on track. It starts... It starts with fiscal responsibility.
Oh, Lord. I told you.
We have to get the deficit down.
There's just not enough. There's no horses. There's no carriages. Wish I'd never listened to you in the first place.
All spending increase is paid for. So today, I am introducing a new golden economic rule.
Ooh.
Every pound we save will be put to work. At least half will go towards cutting the deficit. Because living within our means is our first priority. And with the rest, we will get Britain growing and bring down the taxes that are stifling our economy. Over the next decade, Rachel Reeves is going to double the deficit with her borrowing and tax doom loop. She is stealing from our children and grandchildren, and Conservatives will put an end to it. We will always explain upfront where we will make these savings. We're not going to do what Labour did, promise not to cut public spending, only to snatch away pensioners' winter fuel payments. We are doing things differently. Thanks to the hard work of the Shadow Cabinet, we have already identified £47 billion in savings. Priti has earmarked £7 billion from the overseas aid budget. Alex has identified £8 billion from cutting the civil service. And Helen has found £23 billion from welfare.
I mean, I don't want to be a party pooper, but they could have done that when they were in power, couldn't they? For 14 years, as opposed to opposition for just over a year. But hey, well done, everybody.
Under our golden rule, half of those savings will go towards reducing Labour's deficit. With the rest, we are going to unleash our economy. That's the Conservative way. Responsibility today, opportunity tomorrow. Like so many young people, all of my first jobs were on the high street. Yes, in McDonald's, have I ever mentioned that? But it wasn't just me, all of my friends were doing similar jobs. Cafes, local pubs, family-run shops, the places that make our high streets what they are. The shops and businesses essential to communities in every town and village. And so on Monday, you heard Mel make our commitment to abolish their business rates. So whether you're a councillor, a mayoral candidate, campaigner, I want you to go out there and spread the word that the Conservatives are bringing back the high street.
Hey. Bringing back the high street, baby!
Is growth. It always has been, and it always will be. Countries with cheap energy grow faster. Countries with expensive energy decline. Right now, we pay four times what industry in the US does for electricity. The result? We are deindustrializing. It's not just manufacturing that is disappearing, not just steel, not just chemicals, not just ceramics, not just oil and gas. We are losing our farming industry. We are losing our fishing industry. These are the foundations of a strong economy, and they are going all because we chose a slogan of net zero over a serious strategy for a stronger economy and a better environment. So I am saying enough. I am reversing this.
Net zero, one of the biggest sort of platforms of David Cameron's leadership of the Conservative Party, which began in the year that Comey Badenoch told us at the beginning of this week she joined the party. I wonder if it's a bit like with Nell and I going on holiday and she joined the Conservatives by accident.
The Climate Change Act and replace it with a proper strategy that actually works. A strategy which protects the natural environment and the landscapes we love. A strategy that takes sensible steps to tackle climate change without bankrupting ourselves in the process. We will cut bills for families, slash costs for businesses, end the madness that you have to tear out your boiler or disconnect your gas hob. We are going to bring industry and jobs back home. This is real action, conference, not slogans. Conference, I am not a climate change skeptic, but I am a net zero skeptic. Britain has already done more than any major country to cut emissions. But we cannot have a law which will make this country poorer while creating jobs abroad and increasing our reliance on hostile states. So we will axe the carbon tax on electricity. We will scrap Labour's wind and solar levy. And instead, we will give you our cheap power plan. Through this plan, we will cut bills by £165 for the average family, nearly £5,000 for the average restaurant, and over £1,100 for the average pub. These are savings that can be passed on to consumers. So, conference, I won't promise you free beer, but I do want you all to have cheaper beer.
More or less the same. I can't. I'm so sorry. This is an appalling miscalculation on my part. But
so now
it'll be over soon, I promise.
Put British prosperity first. Give this country the cheap, reliable energy it needs to thrive again. Backing nuclear, but also recognising that it is pure folly to ban new oil and gas extraction while paying to import resources that Norway takes from the very same basin. So when it comes to the North Sea, we have a very simple policy. Drill our oil and gas now. Conference, you have seen it out there in the fringes all over Manchester, that this is a party fizzing with ideas, building our policy program, setting out our plans, a tax cut for our high streets, a helping hand for the young with our first jobs bonus, reforms to welfare, 10,000 new police officers, tripling stop and search, scrapping the sentencing council, a new removals force, improving behaviour in schools, doubling apprenticeships, support for our veterans, £165 off your electricity bills, drilling in the North Sea, an end to the energy profits levy, scrapping the family farm tax, scrapping the family business tax, scrapping VAT on school fees, out to the ECHR, a plan for our borders, a plan for a stronger economy.
And a partridge in a pear tree.
And conference, because of all the savings we found and costed, because of the tough decisions on what the government shouldn't do, because of our golden economic rule, we can afford to make one more announcement.
That's not sarcasm.
As the Conservative Party, we know who our people are. They are people who work hard. They are the people who save hard. They are the people who understand the importance of putting down roots. They are the people who make sacrifices today for a better life tomorrow. They do the right thing. Our people are the Brits who want to get ahead in life. At the heart of a conservative Britain is a country people who want to, is a country where people who wish to own their own home can. I remember the joy when I got the first set of keys to my first flat, the excitement of opening my own front door for the very first time, the smell of the fresh paint. I remember it just like yesterday. I want everyone in our country to have that feeling, to know it's your place, your house, your home. We Conservatives believe that owning your own home gives you a real stake in society, roots in your community. But our housing market is not working as it should. There is a big barrier that keeps getting in the way. That barrier, conference, is the tax you have to pay when you buy... Oh,
I thought she was going to say landlords.
I haven't even said what it is yet, but you all know. You all know that that barrier is stamp duty. Young people trapped in the pain of renting, workers who want to further their career, pensioners who want to downsize but can't afford the thousands of pounds they have to pay in tax. Conference, stamp duty is a bad tax. It is an unconservative tax. The last Conservative government cut stamp duty for thousands of home buyers. But now we must go further. We must free up our housing market, because a society where no one can afford to buy or move is a society where social mobility is dead. So I have looked at the stamp duty thresholds to see where we can change them. I have looked at the rates you have to pay to see if we can lower them. I have decided that we can't, because that simply wouldn't be enough. Conference, the next Conservative government will abolish stamp duty on your home. It'll be gone.
You don't pay stamp duty, do you?
I thought you'd like that one.
Under £500,000. Isn't that already exempt from stamp duty? But they're literally, I mean, okay, well, it's very, very good news for anybody who's got a house worth £1.5 million or above. It's extremely good news. So I guess, thank you. That's great. I'm precisely the kind of person you should be giving money to.
Thank you. That is how we will help achieve the dream of home ownership for millions. Home ownership should be a dream that's open to everyone. Abolishing stamp duty on your home is a key to unlock a fairer and more aspirational society. We cannot unpick every tax. The debt, the deficit, and the damage this Labour government is creating means we cannot do everything all at once. Scrapping stamp duty will benefit people of all ages, because conservatism must speak to all generations. The young professional buying their first flat, the couple looking for somewhere to bring up their first baby, the growing family hunting for their forever home, the pensioner who wants somewhere a little smaller or maybe to move nearer the grandchildren. No longer will they be punished with a tax that is a barrier to doing the right thing for them, for their family, and for society. And this change will bring wider benefits to our economy too. Because every time a home is sold, it triggers a chain reaction of activity. Movers, builders, decorators, flat pack furniture and DIY. Trips to Next, John Lewis and IKEA. And I can afford to do this while still leaving space within my golden economic rule, because that's the fiscally prudent way to do things. That's what Conservatives do. Conference. I want to see a better Britain, where people have a brighter and more prosperous future. The Labour Party fails when it follows its principles. We fail when we don't follow ours. We are going to follow the same timeless conservative principles which have led us to success in the past. Personal responsibility, free enterprise, family, freedom of speech. People want to know what I stand for? I stand for a government that takes less of your money and doesn't interfere in your life. Where the state does less, but does it better. Where those who create wealth are welcomed with open arms, not driven from our shores. Where reward matches effort. Where Britain stands tall in the world. I stand for an economy where profit is not a dirty word, where enterprise is supported, not crushed.
Stamp duty threshold, $125,000, and then it goes up. But the more your house is worth, the bigger the cheer will be.
I stand for a country where what you put in determines what you get out, where excellence is celebrated. I stand for a country where actions have consequences, where we talk about responsibilities as well as rights, where crime is punished and justice is served, where the welfare of victims outweighs the welfare of criminals.
To be clear to a few texters, I didn't actually force you to listen to this. There's plenty of other things you could have done as well. But I'm grateful to you for sticking around.
I stand for a society where free speech trumps hurt feelings, where everyone knows what a woman is, where people are judged by the content of their character, not the colour of their skin, where the vulnerable are supported, but where freeloaders are told where to get off.
A bit uncomfortable for Robert Jenrick, of course, who yesterday dominated the news agenda because of his determination to judge people precisely by the colour of their skin. But hey-ho, on we go.
Conference, I stand for stronger borders and a stronger economy so that the young can fulfil their potential, the old can live out their years in dignity, and everyone can achieve their dreams to own a home, run a business, raise a family. This is the Britain I stand for. If it is the Britain you stand for, then stand with me and let's build it together.
Your thoughts on this shortly, 0345 6060973. I'm serious as well. Look, I think it's an absolute pudding, but I'm more than happy to be cautious, disciplined, not in the way that Tory MPs used to like, I mean verbally. Is that, are we done? Another wave. I stayed tuned in, writes Paul, so you didn't have to endure this alone, James. Thank you, Paul. Thank you. It makes a difference, actually. Okay. I think she's stopped. Well, 10 minutes longer than scheduled, but hey, it's my fault as well. It's all my fault. Hang on, she's back. Oh, Lord, the husband's coming onto the stage. That's nice, they all do that. So it's first-time buyers who get even bigger stamp duty exemptions, up to about £300,000, I think. And that, I think, concludes... she's joined on stage by her husband, Hamish, who I discovered recently went to the same school as me. Do you know, she... Oh, it just doesn't matter, does it? Two things have happened to me at the hands of Conservative MPs and involving my school. One of which was her trying to make hay out of the fact that I went to a public school without mentioning that her husband went to the same one. But that is only the second most embarrassing thing that a Conservative MP has ever done with regard to where I went to school. And I'm going to give a special prize to anybody who can tell me what the most embarrassing thing a Conservative MP has ever done while trying to make some sort of hay out of the fact that I went to a public school. Something I'm entirely unembarrassed by and completely... In fact, the only reason they know where I went to school is because I talk about it. Some would say too much. Anyway, enough about me. I just want to take a moment to welcome everybody back from Heart 70s, if I may, because can we just text everyone who's been listening to Heart 70s? Please tell them we're back now with the normal programme. I've got quite a bit to get through this hour. We'll catch up with Natasha Clark shortly about that speech. Simon Marks will join us because I am increasingly persuaded that we are not doing enough on what is actually happening in the United States of America. Lewis Goodall has a new podcast that I know you're going to enjoy, so we'll talk to him about that as well. And I also have, a frankly astonishing development that broke over the weekend, but I didn't bring it to your attention because A, I thought you already knew, and B, I don't have the words to describe it, but if I were to tell you that a prominent member of the far right in this country has been invited to Israel this week by the Israeli government, who is the last person on earth you'd think it could possibly be, given their track record? So a prominent member of the far right with a history of... I don't want to give you too many clues. Who would be the person that would make you go, O-M-G? Unless, of course, you're over the age of 17, in which case you'd go, oh, my goodness. And if you go for the most outrageous person you can think of, it pains me to tell you that you'd almost certainly be right.
This is LBC.
When BP asked me to read the voiceover for their new Wild Bean Cafe ad, I thought I knew what to expect. But when they told me I'd be reading the script next to a mountain waterfall, on horseback, strumming a harp, in a hailstorm, naked, ow, 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 well, that was wildly unexpected. Just like Wild Bean Cafe having a freshly ground signature espresso blend for everything from Americanos to flat whites in a fuel station. Wowzers. Wild Bean Cafe, only at BP. Subject to availability at selected BP stores only.
At TfL, we're helping make roads safer. We're continuing to roll out lower speed limits because 20 miles per hour roads have already seen 24% fewer collisions causing death or serious injury. We're also improving junctions to help keep you safe and improving visibility for our bus drivers with new wing mirror cameras. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Comparison of collisions data before and after implementation of 20 miles per hour speed limit.
Business healthcare sounds pricey.
At Benenden Health, it's less than £16 per employee per month, which...
will go up when people use it.
Actually, no. We don't do price hikes each time our services are used. Just
medical questionnaires for everyone.
No. And it's quick and easy to join.
Sounds great. I'm in.
Benenden Health. Healthcare done different. Fee review periodically. T's and C's apply. Selected surgical procedures. Immediate access for businesses. Wait periods apply for personal membership. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
At Pets in a Pickle, we're here when it matters most. For fuss-free pet insurance policies as unique as they are. Visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
Play Set for Life from the National Lottery. Winners get 10k every month for 30 years. You could win on repeat. Set for Life. Play now on the National Lottery app. Terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It's 17 minutes after 12. It wasn't Heart 70s for me, right, Ian? It was Heart 80s, but I'm back now. I thought I'd better let you know. Thank you, Ian. Thank you to everybody who has steered themselves back to the good ship. The good ship Jimbo. Still in Terry Wogan mode. After that extraordinary speech. You put me in a very difficult position now, or Kemi Badenoch has, because I cannot conceive of circumstances in which somebody would think that was a a good or helpful speech. You talk about a misdiagnosis of the problem. I mean, even if you wanted to look at the fiscal impact of it, unless you believe that all of those people have just found billions of pounds down the back of sofas that they were sitting on for 14 years, but vacated last July. That's the crucial point about all of these billions of pounds in savings that she described or claimed. A generous estimate would put the amount of money she just gave away at £12 billion. So it's tax breaks for private education, creating a massive new deportation force, promising pensioners they can keep all of the benefits that they currently enjoy, and then about another £10 billion, give or take, on the abolition of stamp duty, which is better news the more you already have. So if you're lucky enough to own a property worth over £1.5 million, then the portion above £1.5 million, it will be hit with 12% worth of stamp duty. If your property is worth below £125,000, you don't currently pay any. And then it goes up in gradations 2, 5, 10. So what's really tricky about this in terms of providing meaningful or substantive analysis is that the massed ranks of the Conservative Party high command have tried desperately to come up with a big rabbit to pull out of the hat. And they've come up with a giveaway of £10 billion to people who are, by definition, already the wealthiest in the country. And if she's abolishing it entirely, the people celebrating loudest will be buy-to-let landlords. But, you know, the devil will be in the detail. And that is only being talked about by me because it was the biggest thing in the speech. It was the big reveal. It was the big woohoo moment. And it is, even if you're minded to like it, austerity square, or not even austerity square, it is a transfer of wealth from the public purse into the pockets of people lucky enough, and obviously I'm one of them, to be on the property market already. And it's the bigger your property, the more valuable your property, the wealthier you are, the more money she's just given you. But hey, don't take my word for it. 0345 60 60 973 is the number you need to tell me what you made of that. And what I really, really want you to do is tell me, tell me why you liked it. Let me find you a text from someone pretending to like it, or at least someone who does like it. But just bear with me for one moment. I've got Natasha waiting. Hang on, Ash liked it, I think. Oh, no, he didn't. My bad, sorry, he's being sarcastic. I'm just trying to find someone who liked it. There must be someone who liked it. I'll keep looking, but I can do two things at the same time, because I want to listen to Natasha Clark as well, who, poor thing, had to actually sit through that in the room without the benefit of my hilarious commentary. Natasha, what happened?
James, I can find you around 500 people in the room just behind me that did really like that speech. And I have been saying all week that this Tory conference has been a bit of a weird mix of delusion, desperation and despondency. But today the main hall, it was probably the... thank you. Today in the main hall, it was probably the former. A really positive reception, actually, in there for Kemi Badenoch's speech. And I just grabbed a few people on the way out there. And they said, actually, they thought that was one of Kemi Badenoch's best speeches that she's ever made, that it was one of the highlights so far of her as Tory leader. So I think what we can really take from that, and of course that big eye-catching announcement of stamp duty, is that this probably has given Kemi Badenoch a little bit more time as Tory leader. Now, I don't think it's going to be enough to save her just to have one good Tory speech, but lots of the members that I've been speaking to here do think that she needs more time to try to make an impact. Obviously the question is, when you look at the polls, when you look at how everybody outside of this hall is receiving the Tory leader and Kemi Badenoch at the moment, of course it's dire. Of course the Conservatives doing terribly, 15%, 16%, 17%. Will these announcements be enough to make any of a shift in some of those polls? We'll have to wait a few days for that.
No,
but the vibe here in the hall, it probably won't, but equally stamp duty, an incredibly unpopular tax. I imagine she may get a little bump in the polls from announcing that. Of course, we'll have to wait for that and see. But lots of standing ovations, lots of laughter at her jokes, lots of applauses. Compare it with other Tory leadership speeches, leader speeches. No stage falling apart, no coughing fit, no P45 being handed to her by a protester. I thought the speech itself, a little bit of a greatest hits of Kemi Badenoch's, all of her speeches that she's delivered so far. Lots of attacks of Labour, like you'd expect, lots of attacks on Reform and the Lib Dems. But interestingly, James, a little bit of a defence about the last Tory government. That's something that Kemi Badenoch has been really reluctant to do in the past. She just won't put her name to that last Tory government because of how unpopular it was. And of course,
she was in
that
it.
Historic defeat, very much.
She was
exactly,
in it.
And that's exactly why she doesn't want to talk about it.
Right. So what was she boasting about? I missed that bit.
Yeah, there was a little section at the pass where she was talking, the very front of the speech, where she was talking, saying, look, we were in government for 14 years. Of course we got things wrong. Of course we got major things wrong on immigration and the economy. But it's not all that. We do have things, good things from our 14 years in government to point to. She pointed to education standards going up. She pointed to the war in Ukraine. She pointed to paying down the deficit. So it's interesting that she does want to not so much distance herself from that the last Tory government in some ways. But also, you know, as you'd expect, she focused her main arguments on Keir Starmer, on the current government, talking about how they're failing to deliver the change. And I think many people out there in the public will absolutely resonate with it, with that message. However, are they still willing to then give the Conservatives back their vote? I think we know the answer to that. I think we know that at the moment the answer to that is no. But considering we went into this Tory conference here in Manchester expecting that Kemi Badenoch may face a leadership challenge herself, I think actually she's going to be coming out of this a little bit stronger than when she went into it. Robert Jenrick, as you've been discussing for the last few days as we've been discussing for the last few days on LBC, has not had a fantastic conference. There was somebody that said to me last night, well, actually, they may be looking to what happened to Andy Burnham up in Manchester at the Labour Party conference as an example of how not to launch a leadership coup against your current leader. So actually, I think Kemi Badenoch will be coming out of it going, actually, strong, maybe not, steady as she goes, potentially. If she can move the polls, is of course the main question. You might say no, but lots of these Tory members that I've been speaking to say that actually we do need to give Kemi Badenoch some more time to try to make some gains, and they believe that she's actually given one of the best speeches of her premiership so far, and this could actually be the highlight.
I mean, you might be right. It doesn't necessarily move it into the realms of compliment. It could well be the best speech she's ever given, but still one of the worst speeches ever given by a party leader. How much damage has Robert Jenrick's comments about white faces done? I mean, among the crowd there, probably not as much as in the wider population, but what's the chatter? What's the buzz?
Yeah, I think amongst the people here, probably not. And I think an argument about immigration and about integration is exactly the kind of thing that Conservatives here would like to talk about. Obviously, the way that Robert Jenrick described it and having accusations thrown that you are, the words that he used were racist. Of course, that's not exactly the ideal messaging coming out of any party conference, let alone a party that's doing so badly in the polls. But yes, look, people I've been speaking to for the last few days, really hoping that this is rock bottom for the Tories. But actually, I was speaking to some pollsters just a couple of days ago who say, actually, of course, there is still further to fall. We do still believe, according to those pollsters, that Reform do have more to eat out of this Tory vote. Kemi Badenoch will desperately be hoping that this very eye-grabbing policy announcement about stamp duty, abolishing that, if indeed the Conservatives get back into power, will help to slow that decline. But Reform doing very well. Labour obviously doing very badly. And absolutely Reform being able to sweep up votes from both of those parties. But yes, like I say, people that I'm speaking to do want to give Kemi Badenoch a little bit more time to see if she can bed in as Tory leader. I don't think it's going to give her much more time. We're potentially talking about months. I don't think we're talking about years here. This may be Kemi Badenoch's best speech yet, but there are still many people here that believe that it could be her first and last conference as Tory leader.
I don't know that anyone would ever really want that chalice until after next year's locals in May, but I take your broader points. Is that it now? Is it normal service? We have PMQs next week. Can we not take another speech like that for another year? Is it all over, the whole season?
I think it's all over, James. I think we're back to new, normal service from next week.
Hurrah. Are you going to take some time off? You must be shattered.
You know what, James? I'm a little bit depressed by being hanging out with so many depressed Tories for the last week, so I'll be glad to go back to some happier thoughts back in London.
Well, I'll do my best to provide them. Natasha Clarke, LBC's political editor there, describing a previously undiagnosed condition of political depression osmosis. It's just by dint of being around these people, you absorb the black moods. I don't know. I'm very blessed, as you know, with a privilege of being able to not pay much attention to financial matters. I'm one of those awful people who thinks he's got enough. So I don't know how animating stamp duty is. I look at how much it's going to cost me to move house, which I have done twice in the last 15, 18 years, and I just take the final figure as the one that I decides whether I can or can't afford something. So I'm conscious of the, it's not a smugness because it probably makes me quite stupid, but I don't know how big a deal, offering a £10 billion giveaway to people already lucky enough to be able to afford their own home will prove to be. I don't share Natasha's initial, sense that it's a very big deal, but then of course I'm not somebody who has a lot of money and thinks that the job of government is to give me even more. And I can't really find, even in my texts, much evidence of people who liked it. Hang on, let me try and find someone. Yeah, I mean, you know, John's unhappy about me doing the odd gag during the speech, but he's got absolutely nothing positive to say about the speech. Maybe I'll tell you what, John, mate, let's chalk it up as a score draw. And the reason why you can't actually offer up anything positive about the speech is because I talked over all the good bits. There you go, you can have that one for nothing. No, I've still got nothing. It's coming out to 12:30. I've got room for your thoughts. I guess there's only so many ways you can say. A, how can she blame everything that her party did upon the people that have been in power for not even 18 months yet? B, how can undoing the relatively small thing, or the ones that she's focused on, possibly address the scale of the problem that she's describing? C, how can anybody argue with the fact that the Conservatives did indeed introduce the modern police force in 1828, something that she very boldly decided to take a lap of honour for? I've got room for your thoughts, and I'm probably going to need them because I think I've now run out. It's 12:30 and Dominic Ellis has your headlines.
Kemi Badenoch has promised to restore a strong economy in her closing speech to the Conservative Party conference. The Tory leader has set out a series of promises on public finances, immigration and welfare, and also including plans to scrap stamp duty. Downing Street has strongly rejected claims the government was responsible for the collapse of a Chinese spying trial. The charges against Christopher Cash and Christopher Berry, who both denied the allegations, were dropped last month. And officials from both Israel and Hamas have expressed optimism ahead of today's Gaza ceasefire talks in Egypt. The two sides have exchanged lists of prisoners and hostages who'd be released should a deal be reached. LBC weather, dry with sunny spells for many, some light showers developing in northwestern areas, highs of 18 degrees.
This is LBC.
When you travel the island of Ireland, the Stena Line way, you're saying yes to more legroom.
I can see the top.
Yes to dipping your toe in. And yes to meeting new friends. Because whether it's Dublin, the Wild Atlantic Way, Northern Ireland or Ireland's ancient East, when you travel the Stena Line way, you're saying yes to travel your way. Book now from just £149, single, car and driver at stenaline.co.uk.
Ever wondered what power is? Power is transforming the sun into your own energy source. Power is getting energy companies to pay you. Power is enjoying your morning coffee, knowing you created the energy to make it. Well, you and the colossal ball of fire in the sky. Because with solar panels from Hive, the sun works for you. Hive, know your power. May not cover all electricity usage, roof and weather dependent. Paid for surplus requires eligible SET tariff.
What if the doctor said months, not years? Sorry.
I want to do one last job with you before I die.
Saran Jones and Jodie Whittaker star in an all-new drama.
Well, let's just say you'll be clearing seven figures.
One job, that's it.
You can't get in between them because it's the game.
Some friendships are criminal.
I've kept my nose clean. Shut up, you love it.
You really don't understand the risks involved.
Go on.
New drama, Frauds, available now on ITVX.
Get the news your way and combine breaking news with expert opinion to see the full picture.
With award-winning journalism on air and in your hand, the LBC app puts you in control.
The biggest stories of the day delivered how you want it
and when you want it.
Download the LBC app now.
News your way.
Now in your hands.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
It is 12:32. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. To paraphrase then, that was the speech, Kemi Badenoch's speech to the Conservative Party conference. Stephen Bush of the Financial Times puts it best. Badenoch's brain should be studied. She visibly believes that she has put the hours in working while all her policy suggestions are just obviously picked up on Twitter without any critical thought before they end up as policy. She was also visibly confused as to who was in office between 2010 and 2024. And the other point to make is that it was the contained two announcements, one of which is fantastic news for people whose properties are worth over £1.5 million, and one of which was absolutely terrible news for parents of children whose neurodiversity, particularly ADHD, is so awful that the prospect of using public transport or having to make their own way around town is close to inconceivable. You probably know people in that category. There aren't many of them, but the points you'd have to pick up on PIP in order to qualify for a motability car in the case of a disabled child will be, usually it'll be a combination of ADHD and autism, to the point where perhaps in the olden days we might have described it as agoraphobia. So by taking away a motability car from families like that, you're essentially putting those children under house arrest. And their parents as well, of course, for much of the time, because their ability to get to places they can go if they haven't got a vehicle of their own will have been taken away overnight. So great news for millionaires. And appalling news for the parents of children with absolutely crippling ADHD and other mental health disorders. I mean, who wouldn't cheer it, eh? 12:34 is the time. We can still say, though, that things here are considerably better than they are in the United States, of course, where our Washington correspondent Simon Marks plies his trade. And he joins me now. And what I want to steer you towards immediately, Simon, if I may, is something that I thought was going to stay in the realms of fiction for a little longer. I'm thinking of Alex Garland's recent film, Civil War, where a very far-right president essentially deployed the military from one state on the ground in another state against the wishes of the governor or government in that state. And I think we're already there, or as near as damn it, aren't we?
We are absolutely there, James. Not just deploying the National Guard from other states, but federalizing the National Guard in, for example, Illinois and Oregon, and taking them over and deploying those states' National Guard on their own streets, reporting to him, the President of the United States, not to the respective governors of those states. I think that over the last few days, the situation has taken a really very, very dangerous turn. We are now seeing, particularly in Portland and in Chicago, direct confrontation on the streets between the armed, masked thugs, and I think that it is perfectly reasonable to use that phrase to describe them, who have been recruited to work for Donald Trump's Immigration and Customs Enforcement Division. They are deployed in great numbers in both cities, now backed up by the National Guard, the federalized National Guard from those states and others that have been sent in. They are racially profiling, sweeping people off the streets without asking any questions before they take them in. Only once they get into ICE detention facilities are people then given an opportunity to prove whether they are American citizens, permanent legal residents of the United States, or in some cases, illegal immigrants that the government can then slate for deportation. And the more muscular and brutish that effort becomes by these Immigration Customs Enforcement Division agents, the more now the local police departments in Portland and Chicago, over whom Donald Trump has no writ, are pushing back. So over the weekend, we saw astonishing scenes in Chicago where ICE accidentally tear gassed members of the Chicago Police Department in a standoff outside the Broadway detention facility that the Immigration Customs and Enforcement Division operates there. The police chief in Broadview, which is a suburb of Chicago, says that he is now considering taking criminal charges, laying criminal charges against the federal government over a series of phone calls that ICE agents have placed to the emergency services, describing things that are, they say, taking place outside the detention center. And then when the police arrive, they discover nothing's taking place outside the detention center. So the local police chief says they are trying to foment unrest by goading police into attending the scene where, you know, maybe a handful of protesters are gathered outside, sometimes not even that. So he's accusing the federal agents of wasting police time. And in Portland, astonishing scenes overnight where at one point police officers were threatening to arrest ICE agents who seemed intent on driving one of their vehicles into a crowd of protesters. So you don't, you know, you don't have to be a visionary to understand that the danger of all of this spinning out of control, with all of these people carrying guns, all of these people carrying weapons, and by the way, some of the protesters and demonstrators also armed. This is an absolute tinderbox now,
and it's not an accident, to be clear. I mean, they seem to be seeking the kind of conflict and confrontation you're introducing the possibility of, or not even the possibility, it's already started happening. And this fits with your thesis from just a couple of months ago, that the madder things get on the streets, the easier it will be for him to call off the midterms.
Yes, this is absolutely deliberate strategy now, James. I mean, he's been open this week. He's thinking of invoking the 1807 Insurrection Act, which will then allow him, he argues, Donald Trump, to deploy American troops, not just the National Guard, active duty troops and Marine Corps members onto the streets of cities that just happen all to be run by Democrats. If you saw that astonishing interaction between Donald Trump and his Secretary of War, Pete Hegseth, last week, with all the generals and the admirals who were traipsed back to Washington, ordered to leave their commands and return to Washington, D.C., and they sat there in stony silence, listening to their commander-in-chief telling them that there is an enemy within, in the United States, that they now need to be ready to battle on America's streets. This is not speculative. This is not, this is absolutely not from the pages of fiction. He is telling us exactly what he's going to do. And you know, when Nigel Farage referring to other things that Donald Trump has said, you know, the reference to Sharia law in London and his claim that the cities of Europe are all going to hell, Nigel Farage says, well, you must take him seriously, but not literally. It's a huge mistake. You should take him literally, because he tells you exactly what he's going to do. And then, as you and I have charted over the last several weeks, we see it all playing out right in front of our eyes.
I can't keep asking you the same questions, but the escalation is underway. Did you see the Stephen Miller exchange on CNN when he used this word plenary authority?
Yes, yes.
I mean, how significant do you think that is? I wouldn't ask, actually, because I thought that it was just a bit of blue sky mischief, but it is being picked up by serious people as evidence of what might be coming next.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Stephen Miller actually sort of suddenly realizing he's said it too soon, he said it out loud, and he has a weird sort of glitch, doesn't he, where he just goes silent for a while. I'll play the clip after I finish talking to you.
Yes. I mean, Stephen Miller's on an obvious trajectory here. This is a man who 2 months ago described the Democratic Party as a domestic extremist organization.
This is led by Joe Biden.
Yes, correct.
Until recently. Yeah.
And then within the last couple of weeks, that rhetoric has accelerated, and he started talking about the Democrats and what they refer to as the radical left as being terrorists. And he is absolutely determined, he says, to proscribe them. He has spoken of exiling them. We're seeing many of his acolytes, including the Secretary of Homeland Security, Kristi Noem, completely trampling on the Constitution. She started questioning suspects yesterday in Portland, you know, suspected illegal immigrants. No rights were read to them. There were no constitutional processes. Imagine the Home Secretary, imagine Shabana Mahmood taking to the streets after Manchester and striding up on camera to police cars and demanding to question people. I mean, it's absolutely extraordinary. And where Stephen Miller talks about plenary authority, they are talking about a national state of emergency eventually being declared in the country. And all of what we're seeing this year is a test bed for what they're going to do on a much grander scale next year if Donald Trump concludes that Republicans are going to lose the midterm elections.
And if the Democrats don't find a way to successfully respond or resist, Gavin Newsom and some others trying, I think it's fair to say, are not failing completely yet.
Yeah, not failing completely. I mean, Gavin Newsom has cut through a bit with his sort of the many interviews that he's given and also the use of his social media account to poke satirical fun at the President of the United States. But the problem that the Democrats have got is that they seem, certainly those elected lawmakers on Capitol Hill, absolutely unable to hold any of these officials to account. If you watched any of the testimony of the Attorney General Pam Bondi before the House, the Senate Oversight Committee yesterday, she treated that committee with utter disdain. She engaged in ad hominem personal attacks on every single Democrat on the committee. She sidestepped again and again questions about Donald Trump's relationship with Epstein, about the head of the entire mass deportation program, who we know was being investigated by the FBI several months ago for taking, for allegedly taking a $50,000 bribe. Every time she was asked questions about it, she fiddled with her makeup. At one point, I think she takes some chewing gum out of her mouth and wraps it into a paper tissue and treats the oversight committee with total disdain. So if you watch that stuff, what you're seeing, again, is the collapse of the checks and balances, the collapse of the governing system. It's not fit for purpose, and Democrats are finding it absolutely impossible to use the rules of the road, even to hold these people to basic account for what they're doing.
Simon, always a it's always a pleasure to talk to you or to listen to you, but it's not a pleasure to reflect upon what you are reporting. You haven't been wrong for a while, have you? Do you think you might be wrong this time?
There's always every possibility, James, that I could be wrong again. I've been wrong before, but it does all keep moving in a very, very unsavory and dangerous direction.
It does, and I am conscious of not doing enough, perhaps, to reflect and report it, albeit that it's not happening here, it's happening over there. Have a listen to this. This is the Deputy Chief of Staff, widely seen as the sort of most extreme member of the Trump administration, saying during an interview that Donald Trump had plenary authority, which would essentially mean that he has freedom to do whatever he wants, most obviously with the National Guard, something that can only be bestowed or achieved or triggered if this country is in a state of national emergency. So just join the dots. You invent a national emergency, you know, it's the Reichstag fire. And you claim that you need the powers that essentially render you a dictator, but you're not supposed to say it yet. And the really interesting bit about it is when he goes silent. Have we got the bit where he goes silent? Because there's some... Just have a listen. Here it is.
Under Title 10 of the U.S. Code, the president has plenary authority. Stephen? Hey, Stephen, can you hear me? I apologize. It seems like we're having a technical issue. We'll try to fix that and get back to you after a quick break. Stay with CNN.
It could be. Some suggestion that it wasn't a technical glitch at all. In fact, quite a lot of suggestions. It may even have been concluded that he just cut himself off mid-sentence, leaving his statement incomplete. You can tell because his lips weren't moving. But he was. You know, oh boy. The time now is 12:47.
LBC's Make Some Noise.
This Friday is Make Some Noise Day, LBC's charity fundraiser helping brilliant projects right across the UK. And right now, you can get involved with a really exciting prize. You and one guest could be exclusively joining all of us here behind the scenes at LBC. You'll start the day with a coffee and a Q&A with Nick Ferrari. Then grab your spot in the studio to watch me, James O'Brien, in action. Alleged action. We'll give you a private tour of the studios here at Global, from LBC to Heart, Capital, and even the Newsagent's podcast, before you catch up with Sheila Fogarty and hear about how she puts her show together. And then it's off for a lavish afternoon tea with all the trimmings at Soho House Hotel. And as if that's not enough, you'll also get two tickets to see my Full Disclosure podcast being recorded live on stage in London on the 19th of February. To enter the competition, just text the word studio, S-T-U-D-I-O, to 84850. That's studio to 84850. By entering, you'll have the chance to make a voluntary £10 donation, which will be added to your phone bill. 100% goes to LBC's charity Make Some Noise, and you have until 4 p.m. on Friday the 10th of October to enter. Standard network rates apply. You must be 18 or over to enter. For full terms and conditions, including prize date restrictions, please visit lbc.co.uk. Good luck, and make sure you stay with LBC all day this Friday for Make Some Noise Day, to find out lots more ways to help our fantastic charity.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
Scrap stamp duty, leave the ECHR, cut public spending on foreign aid and the benefits bill, and cut taxes. Kemi Badenoch's plan. What do you think of it?
Sheila Fogarty on LBC.
Running a ceramic studio is all about balance, right, Nina?
Absolutely. That's why my business deserves the new iPhone 17 Pro. It can help me handle even the busiest workday, from planning my classes to keeping my kiln on track, so my business still holds shape.
The all-new iPhone 17 Pro, as pro as your work demands. Your business deserves the most powerful iPhone on EE, the UK's best network. BT and EE, better for business.
Verify at ee.co.uk/claims.
Welcome our new bookworms to the club. Now, do you read traditional books or e-books?
Oh, real books.
Traditional, always.
Yes, quite.
I read e-books. Mm-hmm. I adjust it so the font's huge.
Ooh, they make large font books.
Think bigger. Imagine Moby Dick all cuddled up with a book. His font size.
Oh, my goodness. Oh.
Maybe it's time for varifocals. At Specsavers, get 2-for-1 varifocal glasses from £110. Conditions and exclusions apply. See online for details.
Early bird offers end Sunday in the Furniture Village sale, with huge savings on many sofas, dining, beds and bedroom furniture. And that's on top of sale prices. Early bird offers end this Sunday in the Furniture Village sale. And remember to order in time for Christmas.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 99 1234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
When BP asked me to read the voiceover for their new Wild Bean Cafe ad, I thought I knew what to expect. But when they told me I'd be reading the script next to a mountain waterfall, on horseback, strumming a harp, in a hailstorm, naked, ow, 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 ow. Well, that was wildly unexpected. Just like Wild Bean Cafe having a freshly ground signature espresso blend for everything from Americanos to flat whites in a fuel station. Wowzers. Wild Bean Cafe. Only at BP. Subject to availability at selected BP stores only.
Leading Britain's conversation. LBC with James O'Brien.
12:51 is the time. Let's sort of be, you know me, I'm nothing if not a team player. So the people waiting to talk to us, why are you sniggering, Lewis Goodall?
No, I agree. Oh, I couldn't agree more.
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah. So people
James
waiting,
Collegiate O'Brien.
That's what they call
you.
It's my middle name.
Yeah.
So the people waiting to talk to me about Kemi Badenoch's speech can instead talk to Sheila, who will be here shortly and taking up precisely the line of inquiry that we were already embarked upon. So
that's better.
It is.
That's nicer for them.
Yeah, because I've got to talk to you. Well, I don't have to. I have
there
chosen
you go, Mr.
To.
Collegiate. That's what I mean, Jack.
Ah, touche. Because this is actually really interesting. This is your new podcast that is, I mean, like all the best stories, almost unbelievable.
It is, yeah. This is a story we've been working on for, I think it's like 18 months, 2 years now. It's called Coining It. It's just came out last week. Basically because I just lived to try and displease Alistair Campbell, it displaced the rest of his politics at the top of the Apple charts, and the news agents, actually, but I've got a vested interest in that, but we'll leave that to one side. It is an extraordinary story, James, you're right. I mean, this is basically about a man, and a guy called James Parker, who was, I think it's fair to say, deeply down on his luck. He was living in a bedsit, he was very ill, he had COPD, among other things, living on benefits, hadn't really made much of his life, I think it's fair to say, and one day, when he was doing these little games in sort of 2015-16, which were quite commonplace at that time, basically where you would do a few little kind of puzzles online, and in return, the companies could harvest your data, but you would get a fragment, a tiny sliver of a Bitcoin. And when he went to cash some of these in this website called CoinSpot, he realized he had discovered entirely by accident a glitch, which basically allowed him to create as many Bitcoin as he wanted. And initially he couldn't believe it, and then he did it again, and then he did it again, and then he did it again. And before he knew where he were, within about 18 months, he'd basically created, he printed effectively, £26 million of his own money. And the thing is that the most, and that's an extraordinary itself, but what's even more extraordinary about the guy is that he decided, obviously, if you discovered this, you might think, well, I'll just do a little bit here and a little bit there, and, you know, not really tell anybody and live off the proceeds. But he decided to tell...
It's a crime. We should be absolutely clear. I mean, it's stealing.
It was a crime.
Before we all get to Robin Hood about it.
Well, indeed. But that is kind of the, you know, he decided to basically tell all of his friends about it, and he decided to show them how to use the glitch and so on. And in the end, it, you know, without spoiling the story too much, you can imagine it all goes wrong. But kind of the thing that really interested me about James was that, you know, this takes place in Blackpool, which, as you know, is one of the sort of poorest places in Britain. It's got a lot going for it in a lot of ways, but it's also got, you know, a lot of the kind of worst social problems. It's usually top of the index of all the different indices of social deprivation and so on. And everybody involved in this, you can say, are people who never had any luck in their lives, pretty much about anything at all. And basically, the moral quandary at the heart of the story is... You know about crypto. I mean, it's a shady world, right? Mm-hmm. It's a shady world, and a lot of shady people have made a lot of money in ways which we can't be quite sure or clear how they've done it. The whole point of it is that it's beyond the regulation of states, right? And yet you've got these people who I think on some level, maybe they knew it was a crime, but they just sort of thought in a way the system, just for once, to use that word, glitching, was glitching for them.
Yeah, and what I love about it is he's not like some genius.
No.
He wasn't doing the coding, or it's not like watching those films where they just have to put loads of green figures scrolling down the screen so that those of us in the audience who haven't got any idea what's going on know that some very clever computer stuff is happening. He stumbled into it in a way that anybody could have done.
He was a complete chancer, as were virtually all of the people around him who did almost nothing to try and conceal the crime. I mean, you know, again, James, you might think that, you know, you might kind of keep it quiet. This is a man who was calling up taxi firms in Blackpool and giving them 500 or quid or 1,000 pound tips. You know, all the local taxi drivers started, like, every time he put in a call, would race down to his house.
They called
it, yeah, they all called it, they called it the wacky races in Blackpool. They would just try and get there as quickly as possible. You know, this is a man, but there, and so you're right, it is a crime, but it's this, there's this weird juxtaposition of kind of it all being on one level, obviously a crime and wrong. And at one point they go to Dubai and they're literally in Dubai standing there with briefcases full of gold and full of jewelry and full of luxury watches. And yet at the same time laundering the money. And yet at the same time they basically stay in Blackpool. And James Parker, the most glamorous thing you can basically think to do with the money,
go on,
is go and live in a North Euston hotel in Fleetwood. And he thinks he's made it. You know, he doesn't go to Monte Carlo. He doesn't go to, you know, anywhere so deeply, deeply glamorous. He just thinks, this is it for me now. And it's a really both charming, but also kind of, actually, a very political story.
Because yes.
It's themes of poverty, of criminality, of morality, and about politics in the sense that, as I say, you know, when you have, for example, going up to and including the President of the United States, Donald Trump, days before he goes into office, literally creating his own new token, the Trump coin, not a form of crypto as such, but a sort of fungible token thing. And, you know, he's asked about it. He makes billions because he's going to be the guy who's about to regulate this industry. Mm. His company makes billions off it. He's asked when he becomes president, well, Mr. President, don't you think this is a terrible conflict of interest? And what does he say? He says, well, how much money did I make? And the reporter says, well, about $2 billion. And he just turns around and goes, well, that's a lot less than other people.
You know, yeah. And like, that's the President of the United States. And then you've got these lads in black.
You're absolutely right.
It's, you know, and that's the kind of moral quandary at the heart of the story.
It is. And I don't want to say any more because it has a sort of narrative thrust to it. Sam's already listened to it. I've listened to the entire thing in 2 days. The audio production was top tier. It's absolutely brilliant. A few people getting in touch to say they've already enjoyed it. A few people pointing out.
Well, listen again, Sam. Listen again. Let's get the numbers up. Yeah, let's really annoy Gary Lineker.
Vote often. Coining It with Lewis Goodall is available on Global Player now, and there is loads more, loads more to the story. So I've just given you the barest of introductions, and it is, as Lewis has very modestly pointed out, doing rather well at the moment in the podcast.
I've learned from the best, James.
Sheila.
How's your book doing, mate? You'll check
about 250,000.
Yeah, right.
Anyway, it is...
Have some dignity.
12:58. We spent a lot of time talking today about what has happened to the Conservative Party. I thought it would be quite nice to finish with a little reminder of what it used to sound like. Here is Lord Heseltine speaking to BBC's Newsnight last night.
Reform and other parties across Europe today as among the right-wing equivalents of the fascists in the 1930s. Why?
Well, because that's what they are. The fascists were anti-Jews. And the protest today is anti-immigrant. But the same arguments, the same sort of human nature is being stirred up. Enoch Powell did the same in the 70s. In the 60s. And it was a wholly destructive contribution to a civilised society.
Reform would say deporting illegal migrants and bringing down legal migration, which he would point to what the Brexit vote was in part about, is certainly not fascist. It's actually listening to the views of the people. That's democracy.
Yes, I know they would, wouldn't they? But you see, it's the stuff about saying that they're all rapists and robbers and criminals that is the essence of the appeal of reform. And you've got President Trump doing the same in America.
Hard truths for some, just obvious self-evident truths for the rest of us. If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on Catch Up on Global Player and the LBC app, where you can, of course, find Coining It with Lewis Goodall and stay up to date on all the top stories and opinions. Put your news categories in the order you want. Pause live radio, rewind live radio, listen to a range of podcasts, including the James O'Brien Daily, where you can enjoy an hour of the best bits from this show every morning, and download the official app for free from your app store now. Tom Sorbrick will be with you at 4. But now, on LBC, it's Sheila Fogarty.
Thank you. And I don't know what to try. I don't know what to advertise about myself now that you two have gone on and on about.
There's no room for anything else.
I'm getting a fringe next week. I'm getting my hair cut. I'm getting a fringe.
Fringe politics.
And as any of my friends could tell you, I could do an eternal podcast about fringes and about hairstyles, but I won't. Anyway, thanks. That's it from me. Over to you. Britain owes all its black citizens reparations, says Seleni Henry. Is he right? We'll talk about that at 3. Want to talk about special educational needs at 2. And Kemi Badenoch sets out her plan. What do you think of it? Let's talk.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, the Conservative leader Kemi Badenoch says her party will scrap stamp duty if it wins the next general election. She's set out a series of promises on the public finances, immigration, higher education and cutting welfare spending. In her closing speech to the Tory conference in Manchester, Ms Badenoch acknowledged the public is still angry at the Conservatives, but she's accused Labour, Reform and the Lib Dems of shaking the same magic money tree.
Following the same failed playbook, no plan for growth, no honesty about the scale of the challenges, and it always leads to the same result. More government, more taxes, more debt. It is irresponsible, it's cynical, and it's why Britain needs Conservatives back in charge.
In response, Labour says the Tories should be apologising, not peddling the same fantasy economics.
Downing Street has strongly rejected claims the government was responsible for the collapse of a Chinese spying trial. The charges against Christopher Cash and Christopher Berry, who both denied the allegations, were dropped last month. Prosecutors say it's because Beijing was not labelled as a national security threat. Tory frontbencher Alicia Kearns has told LBC that she believes ministers spiked the prosecution.
The CPS tells us that they spent months trying to get evidence from the government that there is a threat from China to our national security, but the government wasn't willing to give those assurances, despite the fact that in November 2023, those assurances were there and had been put in place because the evidential basis was met at that time.
And you can hear the full interview with Alicia Kearns with Sheila in the next half hour here on LBC. Officials from both Israel and Hamas have expressed optimism ahead of today's Gaza ceasefire talks in Egypt. The two sides have exchanged lists of prisoners and hostages who'd be released should a deal be reached. Donald Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, and special envoy Steve Witkoff are set to join negotiations later. New figures suggest the number of homeless people who died in the UK reached a record high of more than 1,600 last year. The government says it is accelerating efforts to tackle the problem. And the price of gold has hit a new all-time high. It's risen above $4,000 an ounce for the first time. It's increased by more than 50% in the past year. It's biggest rally since the 1970s. Investors have been seeking a safe haven asset with mounting geopolitical uncertainty. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 79 at 95.62. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.15. LBC weather dry with sunny spells for many, some light showers developing in northwestern areas with highs of 18 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Amazon Prime Big Deal Days are here. 2 days of big deals on electronics, home, kitchen and more that'll make you feel less like and more like feel like a big deal. Amazon Prime Big Deal Days are the 7th and 8th of October, exclusively for Prime members. Shop now.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there, good afternoon to you. The Conservative leader, Kemi Badenoch, has given her party conference speech today, and she's been saying, hasn't she, since she became leader, give it time, give me time. We're not going to leap quickly to policy decisions or shape the new plan that she has for the Conservative Party after their historic defeat at the general election. And we started, I think, today in that speech to get a glimpse of what she intends to try to sell to the rest of us, to the nation. Some interesting stuff in there, actually. I'll get Natasha Clark, LBC's political editor, in a moment to outline in more detail what Kemi Badenoch said in the speech. In a sense, before it, I was thinking, well, she needs to give, if not the speech of her life, then a very strong speech, not just for her position as leader, although that's clearly a factor, but for the party itself, because I think it's fair to say that this is the first time, this post-election period, is the first time that the Conservatives have been in a sort of existential fight for survival. I think we've seen Labour twice, even relatively recently, in an existential fight for its survival over the years. The Conservative Party has been an astoundingly successful electoral sort of organism, the most successful probably in Europe, certainly. But not at the moment, and not since the last few years, which we've all lived through with them. And I'm sure some of you feel because of them. So I wonder what you make of what she's offering as she and the party battle to survive, what you think their contribution can be. They're the opposition, but people keep putting the word technically in front of that. What do you think their contribution can be at this point? They're not going to get into government anytime soon. The defeat was so massive, and there's the threat posed by reform, not just to the Conservatives, but certainly to the Conservatives. What can their contribution be? Let's get a sense of what she said. Natasha Clark, LBC's political editor, is at the party conference in Manchester. Talk us through how she presented it, Natasha.
Yeah, good afternoon, Sheila. Well, it went down really well, actually, for the Tory leader today in the main hall. Standing ovations, lots of laughter at lots of her jokes, lots of applause. And obviously compare it to, you know, other weak points for other Tory leaders. Theresa May in 2017-18, you know, remember when her stage fell apart? There was a coughing fit. She got handed a P45 by a protester. So none of that. And you said there at the top that you thought Kemi needed to give the speech of her life. And actually, arguably, I'm speaking to some Tories on the way out, some of the members, they certainly thought that that was her strongest speech that she has given as leader so far. So actually, I think despite the fact that, like you say, they are facing an existential crisis, they are doing dire, terribly in the polls. And just like you say, the long shadow from the last election is still stretching over this Conservative Party. But actually, in terms of being able to see off any leadership challenges and to please the party members, Kemi Badenoch, I think, will be leaving this party conference thinking, well, there's been a big tick there, job done there. She has bought herself, I think, a little bit more time in office. And like I say, I'm not saying that it's perfect. I'm not saying that she's about to see a huge bump in the polls and a huge revival for her party. But basically, they are just trying to cling on for the next few months and the next few years. And hopefully the lay of the land, they hope, and many people do hope, will be a bit different to what it is right now. The speech itself, I thought, a little bit of a greatest hits of lots of Kemi Badenoch's speeches put together that she's made over the last year, attacking Labour, attacking Keir Starmer, reforming the Lib Dems, of course, getting a mention too. But interestingly as well, Sheila, some of a bit of a defence, actually, of some of the Tory government and some of the good things that they've done. Because obviously the Tory brand at the moment is so toxic, especially because of what happened during the later years of the government of the last 14 years. But interesting to see her saying, well, actually, there were some good things that we did. We cut the deficit. We stood up for Ukraine and we, you know, helped education standards rise. So interesting to see her not completely distancing herself from that, but really the main focus of her speech today about the dire state of the country under Sir Keir Starmer. She said that Labour had failed to deliver change and had left young people in the country failed.